It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. Coming up, Jason Heiner, editor-in-chief of ZDNet, joins Nicholas DeLeon from Consumer Reports. Owen Thomas from Protocol will talk about the changing streaming landscape. Is streaming about to beat cable TV? Maybe you're going to watch the House of Dragons tonight. We'll also discuss the very weird Mark Zuckerberg avatar and its relationship to a 18th century sculpture. And then, no children in the bathroom without surveillance, a new tool for schools that's raising ire. All of that coming up and a lot more this week on Twit.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 889, recorded Sunday, August 21st, 2022, The Thin Green Line. This Week in Tech is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Going online without ExpressVPN is like using the bathroom and not closing the door. Secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/twit and get an extra 3 months free on a one-year package. And by ZipRecruiter. Summer's packed with things to do, and you can enjoy them all because if you need to hire, ZipRecruiter can help. ZipRecruiter's technology finds great candidates, and you can invite them to apply. Try it free at ziprecruiter.com/twit. And by Audible. Audible lets you enjoy all of your audio entertainment in one app. Let Audible help you discover new ways to laugh, be inspired, or be entertained. New members can try it free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/twit or text twit to 500-500. And by Noom. With their psychology-first approach, Noom Way empowers you to build more sustainable habits and behaviors. Sign up for your trial at noom.com/twit. Time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news with fabulous technology journalists. We've got a great panel for you, kicking things off with my dear friend Jason Heiner, now editor-in-chief of ZDNet. I guess we first met when you were at the Tech Republic, right?
That's right, yes.
Way back in the good old days, and then
way back
through several acquisitions. You never really left the company.
It's true.
Right?
Not since 2001. Since 2001. I've been here at Tech Republic, and then Tech Republic and ZDNet, and then CNET, and then back to ZDNet.
But all the same, basically, parent company. And
my start date is still the same.
21 years. That's kind of mind-blowing, Jason. That's awesome. That's
for
fantastic.
Sure. Yeah. I thought it would last a year at best. So it's all a bonus since
Well,
then.
I kind of know what you mean. When I started podcasting, I thought, well, there's no future in this, but I'll play with it. I haven't been doing it quite as long as you have, but almost 18 years.
Yeah.
18 years now. Also, let's say hello to a good friend, a new friend. He's been on several times now, Nicholas DeLeon from Consumer Union, Consumer Reports. He's a senior electronics reporter over there. Hey, Nicholas.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
Great to
Thanks
see you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, love having
Thank
you,
you
on. You were kind of a late discovery. I think it's been a couple of years now, but it was so great when I found you, and so glad
I basically cold called you. I've been, as I've explained in the past, I've been a fan of you for a long, long time, and I cold emailed you to say, hey, I'm a big fan of your work. Keep it up.
So
and
glad
that was
you
basically
did.
It.
So glad
yeah.
you did. Yeah, thank you. Also, another longtime friend. Now at Protocol, it's, of course, Owen Thomas. He's senior editor over there. It's not the Protocol or a Protocol. It's just Protocol, right?
Just Protocol.
It's Protocol. Protocol.
Hey, it's how things are done.
Yeah. He's got a great big P on his polo shirt. It stands for Protocol. Great to see you. Okay, show of hands. How many of you are going to watch House of Dragons tonight? The new Game of Thrones. New York Times actually had an article say, let's not.
Yeah.
So two out of three are not. That's very interesting. Owen, you and I will be watching this. In fact, it's like a special date. It's the prequel to the Game of Thrones saga. It does not come from George R. R. Martin's pen, which is why they could do it, because they've used up all his ink. and then some. But
did he ever finish the book?
No.
Nope.
Nope.
Still working on it.
Yeah. He and Patrick Rothfuss have become kind of the Duke Nukem forever of fantasy fiction, right? Promised but never delivered. But that's okay. In fact, George R. R. Martin probably, for political reasons, said this is the prequel that should have always existed. I'm 100% behind the House of Dragons. But number of people pointed out this is kind of a battle between old Hollywood and new media, because in 2 weeks, Lord of the Rings debuts on Amazon Prime. So you have Warner Brothers, a 100-year-old, you know, motion picture company. I don't know if this really counts as Warner Brothers. It's been acquired, it's been sold, it's been bought. It's now part of, you know, Warner Discovery and all of that. So this old line media company creating Game of Thrones spent a lot of money. Amazon spent even more money for the streaming rights to the Lord of the Rings series, and then created their own. Is it a prequel or a sequel? I think it's a prequel to the Lord of the Rings.
So, it's a prequel because I think the Lord of the Rings proper, the trilogy, and the Hobbit, that those rights,
they're gone.
As far as I know, remain with Warner.
Yeah. Oh, isn't that funny? Warner has them. Oh, that's hysterical.
So both interesting.
Yeah.
It's such a morass. Like, we're watching The Sandman right now on Netflix, but
so
it's a DC Comics
right
property. And you know, it's like it's such a patchwork of, you know, rights and, like, you know, rights and intellectual property. It doesn't, to a consumer, I don't think it makes any sense. Like, it doesn't give you any signpost to it, like, where you're going to find the stories you like.
Yeah. It said that Amazon spent $250 million getting the rights alone for the Lord of the Rings prequel and committed to 5 seasons. They were already, but it hasn't even debuted. 5 seasons worth at least $1 billion, which would make it, at least at the time, the most expensive TV series ever. I imagine, though, that Warner's is spending a lot on House of the Dragon, the prequel. I'm just looking to see if I can find a number. I don't know how many seasons they've committed to, though. That's interesting. And remember, it's not going to have the showrunners from Game of Thrones, David Benioff and Dan Weiss. After the last season, maybe people are going to be glad. it's a very interesting battle. And the New York Times today says, don't watch either one of them. I think it's link bait, to be honest.
Did I write that? Man, that's us.
Is that how you feel? Are you going to admit to
I
that?
I could not. I'm sure they'll be fine, but I could not be less interested in a media thing than the Dragon Show or Lord. Like, I feel like Lord of the Rings, I feel, A, the books are still awesome. B, the movies, to me, came out basically yesterday. I don't understand the point of this new reboot or the show or whatever. I don't know. I don't get it. I'm more of a video game guy anyway, so I really shouldn't even be talking. But yeah, I personally am not super interested in either property, actually.
It's kind of life or death, I think, at this point for HBO. HBO's been going through a lot of troubles of late. Streaming viewing is flat. They just canceled, I think, 38 shows to save money. They just kicked them off HBO, including a lot of originals. I think there's a bit of a struggle going on these days. And I wonder, because Amazon and Apple have a big advantage. We've talked about this before. Their business does not rely on the success of a TV show.
Right.
They can afford to spend $1 billion yeah. dollars on a TV show.
Yeah.
Just to drive traffic, right?
For sure. It is a big advantage. We just finished a redesign that we've been working on for 8 months.
Beautiful, so really, by the TV. Way. I said this off the air, I'll say it on the air. Gorgeous. Yep.
Thank you, Leo. But because of that, I don't really watch TV. I just see spoilers on Twitter.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that you have been staying up all night doing this redesign?
Well, obviously, I'm not the person doing the redesign, but
no time for sleep.
but we've for 8 months, we've been obviously
really?
these, really busy. Wow. And and also working on, you know, we've been doing some hiring and doing other things. So because of that, I haven't been watching a whole lot of TV. That said, I do understand this really evolving landscape. We write about it. We think about it. We talk about it a lot, the evolving landscape of media. And it is getting to the point where it is getting to an inflection point where there's not enough money coming in from the old streams for old media. And now you have Apple and Amazon who essentially throw in their media buys as part of becoming part of this very expensive subscription, right? For Amazon Prime or Apple One. I guess Apple One you wouldn't call it very expensive, but still more than what Netflix costs, you know, typically. So they're just playing a different game. And so because of that, and the numbers are a lot different. They have built-in audiences for what they're doing. And so all of a sudden you're seeing, like, really this year, there's a changing landscape that's happening in media. And now it's starting to affect not just these big box sort of films and media franchises, but now it's slipping over into live sports as well, which is sort of the last piece of the puzzle that a lot of the traditional media companies, like my former employee, CBS, you know, had to, you know, they had a corner on the market, and that's rapidly changing. And so I think we certainly should be prepared that the game looks a little different going forward.
Do you think, I mean, we just learned that Cineworld, which owns Regal Theaters, declared bankruptcy. Do you think that it's over for movie houses going out to see the movies? Did COVID finally put it out of its misery? Do you think we're all staying home to watch streaming now? Or in your case, Jason, not watch anything, but stay home and work, which is so sad.
Yeah, that is sad. I think that when I go by, and I have actually seen a few movies in the theater over the last 6 months, the theaters look pretty crowded to me, and it might be sort of the post-COVID going back.
They couldn't get back on their feet after a very bad couple of years, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So there is an experience at the movies. I think if you can create experiences, it's the same thing that some of the retailers are doing, right? If you can create experiences that people can get, you know, in store.
Like Alamo Drafthouse, where you go, you can get tacos, you can get beer, and watch a movie.
Yeah, exactly. If you have those in-person experiences, because you can't replicate that online. No. I mean, you can a little bit in your living room, but sometimes you want to get out of your living room, and that's where you want to take advantage of cool experiences like that.
It's also the studios. I think there's a crunch for talent, and the studios are now competing with streaming. And there's a lot of money coming from Apple and Amazon and others, I guess HBO, Netflix for sure. And that's competing with movies for talent. And there's a limited talent pool.
There is, as we're seeing by the lack of quality from some of these shows I haven't watched.
Yeah. The lack of quality in movies, I can't think of there have been a few good movies, but it's not like been a great year for motion pictures, has it?
No, partly why I don't watch is like I haven't seen a whole lot of good quality things coming out that give me any urgency to you know, want to carve the time out. Like I'd rather go exercise or spend time like playing video, like Nicholas mentioned, play video games with my kids or doing something like that than watching the shows, because the quality, it's so watered down because all of these places are buying so much content and then the quality of content is pretty low because then all of these writers are just having to pump out. You know, it's a golden age if you're a writer of scripts, because you just get to pump out stuff constantly. But because of that, the quality is not great
In July, for the first time ever, streaming had more viewers than cable TV, according to Nielsen. And the number one streamer still, despite struggles, is Netflix with 8% of the market. YouTube, of course, doing very well, 7.3%. Then Hulu, Prime Video, Disney Plus, and HBO Max with only 1%. Hulu did well thanks to Only Murders in the Building and The Bear, which I loved. The Bear was a great show if you like food and restaurants. Netflix, despite, you know, struggling a little bit with Stranger Things, wasn't as big as they had hoped. They spent $200 million on The Gray Man. In fact, have already greenlit two more movies, a second and third sequel, with Ryan Gosling as a Jason Bourne-style superhero. And I say superhero, but it's actually made by the two guys who did Avengers Endgame. So it definitely has that. It has a very much of a comic book feel to it. But unfortunately, it did very well in its first week and didn't do so well in subsequent weeks. Maybe people didn't like it. I thought it was fun. So 5 billion minutes. That's how Netflix measures it. 5 billion minutes. Of viewing time, 8% of the total TV viewing. And you might say, well, is it a tech story? It is a tech story because it's how technology has very much changed every part of our lives, including how we are entertained.
I think even though streaming just overtook cable, I think we may have kind of already passed peak streaming, at least in the Hollywood gold rush sense. I mean, HBO Max is cutting back on its production of originals and also like the made-for-streaming category of movies. So under the new CEO of Warner Brothers Discovery, David Zaslav, they've said, we're going to make big theatrical movies and we're going to make movies for HBO, streaming and cable, but we're not going to make as many, HBO Max,
Well, they're also merging the Discovery Plus and HBO.
And their theory is there, I think, is you have a lot of cheap, unscripted reality TV
right.
coming in from Discovery.
Right.
And the economic model of that is just far superior to like putting out a big splashy movie, especially if you're not amortizing that IP across, physical theaters, maybe cable distribution, maybe, other licensing.
Not to mention the fact that Warner Brothers Discovery has $55 billion in debt. Yikes. That's a lot of debt.
Yeah.
Netflix is not debt-free, but, they've borrowed a lot of money at very cheap rates during that long, low interest rate environment we've been in. That's obviously changing, too. And I think, the economy, the macro economy is affecting Hollywood too in that sense. Debt's a little more expensive, so the premise that you use really cheap money to fund all of this IP creation that you then amortize over time, that the calculus is different now.
Netflix debt compared to $55 billion is $14.5 billion, but they also have $6 billion in cash. Their annual interest is the interest they have to pay every year is $752 million. So this is why Netflix, by the way, has been having a lot of trouble in the stock market. People are nervous about the future of Netflix. I don't know. What do you think? What's the future? Is it where do we get our entertainment in the future? Is it just I think Nicholas might be a harbinger. We're just going to play video games going forward.
Right? I'll tell us a fun little anecdote. In 2006, I was at Gizmodo, and we had some consulting thing with Time Warner. So we flew out to California, and some guys were showing them off. Oh, here are the new phones. Some guys were showing them off. Here are the new, here's the new whatever. I was in charge of video games, but the more important or the more interesting conversation I had with them was I was explaining how I consumed media, how I consumed content. It was and I was very frank with them. I was look, I torrent everything. I have an XBMC. I was 20 at the time. I was I torrent everything. I have XBMC hooked up to my TV. I have an over-the-air antenna.
They did not want to hear from
you. Wow. Yeah, no. I was dude, I'm never going to pay for this stuff,
Oh,
actually.
My God.
And okay, when I was 20, it's perhaps not the most polite way to say that. But the point is, I was look, this is kind of the future here. You've got people sitting at home with their own kind of self-selected media situation, which is basically all Netflix and Disney Plus is now today. But they were very skeptical. They're like, oh, people aren't going to stay home and want to pick and choose which shows they want to watch. I was like, are you crazy? You're what? So I feel vindicated, however many years later that, that's exactly what happened. And
I should have listened to that Nicholas kid.
I mean, it's what, again, I was fairly, you know, silly about, very cavalier about my consumption habits. But like, this is like, why would I do?
You were right.
Why would I watch linear television?
You were
if I could pick and choose my, choose my own adventure.
And I think
And they were just very skeptical. I was like, okay, whatever.
At that time, I would think about my kid who would never watch TV, watch YouTube. And when his friends came over, they just had YouTube playing nonstop. I mean, it was a harbinger of the future. And remember, Hollywood's response to this was Quibi.
Yeah, of course.
Which is now the punchline to a joke. Like, does anybody remember Quibi? They fumbled this future to some degree. But remember, Game of Thrones really did very well. So I understand why they're saying, well, maybe we can do, you know, reproduce that success with House of Dragons. I wouldn't want to be in their shoes at this point. Is it a golden time for creators? There's a lot of money floating about.
Yeah. But I think it's getting tighter.
It is getting tighter.
And we talked about this. I remember both Ben Stiller, creator of Severance on Apple TV, and two of the principals in the Ted Lasso show saying, it's weird doing a show for Apple because we have no idea how many people are watching, if anybody's watching. They don't give us numbers. And that's the other thing with streaming. You heard what Netflix numbers are. Well, we have 15 billion minutes. Like, what? What is that? Compare that to ratings. In fact, now, for the first time ever, Amazon and Nielsen closed a deal to have Nielsen, which is the classic old TV rating system, to give them numbers on Thursday Night Football, which is moving to streaming this season.
Things are getting tighter unless you're a sports league. Those rights don't seem to be, Nick Khan, who's the co-CEO of WWE, he was very bullish on the idea of the streamers moving into live. They had their conference call about a week ago. And he's like, look, Netflix already reportedly bid on F1 live rights. YouTube reportedly bid on NFL Sunday Ticket. These streamers are coming, and it's just a matter of time. Look, I watch a lot of soccer. That's on ESPN Plus for La Liga, Barcelona.
Yeah, but Major League Soccer in the U.S., the U.S. Soccer League, is all going to be on Apple for
Apple
the next
TV,
10
yes.
years.
Which is great. Well, it's an interesting conversation. Is that good for the league or is it not? Because now you're on this premium platform, which is okay, that's fine. It's Apple, it's shiny. But are ordinary folks going to stumble across a game?
Are they going to pay Apple, whatever it is a month, $5 a
month,
just to watch soccer?
Are you choosing short-term money over medium to longer-term exposure? Right. And that is a question I don't think anybody knows the answer to. And so Nick Khan's answer was like, well, we're going to do everything. We're going to have a streaming package. We're going to have a broadcast TV package. We're going to have a cable package. I only bring up WWE because I like wrestling. And I think they're actually, speaking of streaming business, an excellent company to kind of study because they've been kind of navigating the digital media situation for arguably their entire existence. They're basically a content or an IP company, and they're just selling it to who's the highest bidder. And nowadays, these are the highest bidders. So they're actually, for the folks listening, kind of an interesting, you wouldn't necessarily think it, but they're an interesting company to study in this kind of wider conversation.
Well, that's what the NFL's trying to be too, right? The NFL, which made a lot of money off broadcast television and still is heavily broadcast, it created an app, NFL Plus, and they're now in conversations for Sunday Ticket, which they say is going to cost $3.5 billion? A lot of money, more than $1 billion a year, I think, for somebody. Yeah. And of course, that immediately, DirecTV, which paid $1.5 billion last time and lost $500 million a year for 3 years, said, nah, that's not going to be us.
Yeah.
Immediately, Google, Amazon, and Apple said, well, we make some money. Maybe we could be players here.
Yeah, and Apple also does MLB. They have live games on Friday nights, which are kind of an interesting experiment for them. I'm
not a fan of what they're doing.
Well, no, I've been a baseball fan my whole life. I've really got way back into it this year for whatever reason. And the Apple TV broadcasts are okay. I would say the presentation is interesting. I'm pretty sure it's 1080p. The announcers, and I'm certainly not the only person who complains.
No, they're terrible.
They're not super good. And it's a question, like, if I want to watch the Mets, I'm a Mets guy. I want to hear Keith Hernandez.
Yeah, you want the local guys.
I want to hear.
By the way, that's the rumor that the NFL will start using or offering, and this is something you can do on streaming. Multiple soundtracks. You could pick the home team. You could pick the away team.
Yes.
I think that's really interesting, right? You could choose.
Yeah, you could do that with MLB TV, MLB.TV as well. You could choose the home broadcast or the away broadcast.
I always choose the home. I'm a homer. I want to hear my Giants.
Yeah, I want to hear my guys.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear
and
some.
And then sometimes they get annoying and you're like, okay, I got to switch over.
At least you have the choice.
Yeah, the choice.
The worst thing is to watch a national broadcast in any sport and hear people diss your team.
Or they don't even know what they're talking about.
Or they don't know what they're talking about. It's just the worst.
Yeah.
So this is a – I think it's an opportunity. I honestly think that the MLS deal with Apple, 10 years for Major League Soccer, which has not been doing that well in the U.S. It's always been a struggle to get soccer and big in the U.S. It's a real opportunity for – on Apple's part to show how you can use technology, do 4K Do, you know, USFL's been using drones to have a drone go into the huddle and then zoom out and zoom back. And I just wait for a player to go, get out of here, and smack the drone. But it's really great as a viewer to see unique angles, unique. And I think Apple could do a lot with stats. They could really be interesting. And I hope they will. They haven't done that with baseball.
MLS
more minimal with baseball, which is exactly not what I want.
MLS is small enough. Is it a major league? I guess depending on who you're talking to, it's a major league, but it's a smaller league. So I feel like it definitely affords Apple the ability, and I'm sure MLS, you know, figured this as well, to experiment to see what they can kind of do. This is not the NFL where you're not going to mess with the NFL. That's
they won't
crazy.
Let you. Yeah.
Yeah, they won't let you. And Major League Baseball, it feels like they would just like not want. But like Major League Soccer is like, okay, cool. Let's see. It skews younger anyway, the sport, at least in the United States. So it's like, let's see what we can do here to make this more exciting or more kinetic or more interesting. Is there a more dynamic broadcast? It feels like MLS is like the perfect size league to kind of try to figure that out with.
To experiment. I will say the only interesting thing I've ever seen in 8K was a soccer match on a 98-inch Samsung TV.
Oh, yeah.
Where you look and you see the ball goes across the screen and it's not a blur, right? You actually see the ball tracking like you're looking through a window. And then they also experimented with some different angles down on the field, up from sort of the opposite
Where was
goal.
This?
So, I mean, this was it. This was in Korea at Samsung's,
Okay.
So it was filmed just to show off 8K.
Yeah.
So very interesting, but it made me actually feel like soccer was less boring watching it, you know, in 8K. And so, which is it, for the US soccer's tough because, you know, a lot of these games are like 1-0, 2-0. The ball just goes back and forth. They call penalties and we don't know why, what offside
means.
They
flop on the ground and they look like they've been hurt. And
they're just at bad times. Like 7 a.m. East Coast, which is 4 a.m. Pacific. No one in California.
Hey, I get up at 6 a.m. to watch Formula One. Don't tell me about that. I'm willing to do that.
Wow.
With rising production costs and rising, you know, rights deals, are the economics going to fall
apart?
Well,
that's a great question. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question.
You know, I don't know if we can sustain the number.
But that's why you look at Amazon, Apple, Google, because they have income, you know, especially Amazon and Apple. It's all part of a services play. You know, Prime is really to get people in the door. I don't think they have to make money on any individual thing. Or maybe they do. I don't know. You know, maybe their shareholders are going to say, wait a minute, why are you spending hundreds of millions of dollars on something that's not making you any money? I don't know.
That's also a good question.
Adding subscribers.
Yeah. Well, Apple has changed its accounting to ARPU, average revenue per user.
True.
How do you get the average revenue up? You get them to buy Apple services, right? You already sold them the phone. How do you get more money out of them? Well, we got football. We got soccer. We got baseball. Would you pay for that? Jason,
the only thing I was going to add.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. The bubble burst in terms of sports rights fees and this type of thing. This conversation has been going on. Again, I'm a wrestling fan, so I kind of studied the business aspect of it for a long time. The difference now is like, you know, let's say a decade ago, it was the broadcast networks. It was NBCU. It was Comcast. It was CBS. It was just now you've got the streamers. You've got YouTube and Apple and stuff. 10 years from now, who will be the new entrants to keep the bubble rising? It's like, okay, for the NFL deal in the year 2040, who is the new company that's going to offer, you know, how many multiples of the previous deal? That is, that's a very long-term question, but like the reason why the fees have continued to escalate is because of, the YouTubes and the Apples of the world. And if those companies, you know, are, this doesn't do well, they don't get the eyeballs, or for whatever reason they don't want to be in sports anymore, who steps in then? That is a question for a little while from now, but you know.
Is WWE's prime revenue from pay-per-view? That's my impression.
It's actually television rights. And that's a good example of consolidation, where World Wrestling Entertainment decided they were not going to make it as a standalone streamer and did a deal with Peacock instead.
Oh, yes, interesting.
Exactly. Yeah. They launched the WWE Network in 2014, and they've been, I listened to every single one of those conference calls. They kept trying to be like, oh, our data is valuable. We're going to, they have these, they thought that 80 million Americans had an affinity, was the word they used for WWE. And I was like, 80 million? That is when 5 million people watch Monday Night Raw on Mondays for free. You're going to tell me 80 million people have an interest in this. So they had like weird expectations when they launched their network. And yes, Owen was right. They sold it the second they could. They had a change in leadership, and he's like, this is not working. They had like a million subscribers, which is fine, but you know, it's a lot easier when you get NBCU to pay you $250 million a year and you basically just have to put on basically random matches. They don't even have to be good, because now you're just providing content. You don't even have to convince fans to buy pay-per-views. You don't have to convince fans to buy tickets. It's just NBCU giving you money for whatever the content is. They've got that deal. So it is a very interesting turn of events.
So forgive me, everything I know about the WWE, I learned from Hulk Hogan. I'm not up on this, but I presume there's stars that can draw, and you're saying that Peacock maybe might not be getting the best matches. It doesn't matter. It's just matches.
It doesn't. If you're WWE, you have zero incentive to provide compelling matches or interesting matches, because you're getting paid. It's like a salary versus being on commission. It's like, well, if I'm getting paid,
I get paid
$50,000 a year. I get paid anyway.
Yeah.
If I'm on commission, I really got to hustle to earn that dollar. It's the same thing.
I'm
going to
watch this with interest. I think while I'm not so much interested in the content, it does sound like it's a great test tube for how a modern content company.
Yes, I would very
changes. Yeah.
Again, it's wrestling. It's kind of who cares, but it is literally a billion dollar revenue company. All the mainstream company, Wall Street Journal, all those guys cover it as you would cover it Netflix or whatever. So if you were to approach it from that sort of angle and like, okay, I'm not going to watch SmackDown on Fridays. I mean, whatever. But like what the business is doing and how they're trying to navigate the, balance all the plates, streaming, broadcast, cable. They're an interesting entity to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and NFTs. And
they're trying that too.
Yeah, and action figures and on and on and on. I mean, this is potentially a very valuable property as long as you can, keep people interested in it.
Yeah, and the question now, Vince McMahon, longtime CEO, he bought the company from his father, but CEO recently retired because of allegations.
In disgrace. Yeah.
Yes. Retired in disgrace. So whatever. But now the question is like, all right, who's buying this company? It's a very healthy business. They make money hand over fist. It pretty much runs on its own. You don't have to do anything. Again, the matches don't matter. You just put person A versus person B, and NBCU's paying you, so it doesn't matter.
That's
so it's like, who's going to buy this?
Yeah.
And all the it's the usual contenders. It's like, well, NBCU could just buy it. Why would they keep paying rights fees every 5 years, escalating rights fees when they could just own the whole thing from A to Z and never have to think of that again? Disney has been talked about.
Is there a stigma though? Does it feel like down market to some of these guys?
That has been the perception they've been trying to fight basically since I was a kid. It's like this is wrestling.
It's play acting.
Yes.
It's not.
Yes.
It's not a real sport. It's theater.
Correct. In its defense, we were just discussing House of the Dragon.
And well, it's like, that's play acting as well.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like, yeah. What is more real? Real. If I want to watch real, I'll watch the NFL. If I want to watch, like, I've got 2 hours to kill, who kind of cares how those hours are spent? So it's like, but yes, to your point, it can be viewed as kind of like, but they've done a good job over the past 10, 15 years of trying to, like, increase the caliber of the advertisers. And so they've been working at at that. And now it is, again, to me, it feels it's a matter of time until someone buys this thing. And it's, and then it's just like another P&L on NBCU's kind of like conference call.
I can see NBCU. You know, it's the kind of thing I think Apple might say, yeah, we're not going to buy wrestling.
I would be surprised if Apple buys WWE.
And correct. I think I'm ashamed to say that. That's very snobby to say. I know I have lots of friends who, like you, Nicholas, are big fans. And it's not down market, really. But I could see Apple saying, well, maybe it's not the right
fit. It feels like a strange fit. Yeah, and they don't have a relationship anyway. WWE has had a relationship with NBCU, with the USA Network, for 30 years or however long it's been. Yeah. So they know each other, and they've known each other. So to me, it feels, again, it feels inevitable, like it's a matter of time. Someone buys this because it is reliable revenue, and it kind of doesn't even matter. That's been, you know, if you ask fans, like really hardcore fans over the past, let's say 10 years, WWE has more or less been unwatchable. It has been bad, and people either hate watch it, or they watch it because they've got podcasts and it's content for the podcast or like whatever. But like, people really have not liked the product, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the ratings are more or less okay. They get paid however they get paid. And it is like inelastic. It's like, it doesn't matter. They could just produce, like, imagine releasing just like a bad album. Man, it doesn't matter because the fans are going to buy it anyway. It's like, well, that's kind of what WWE has been living for
The market's buying it too. They paid $10 million in dividends in the second quarter. They did $10 million in share repurchases.
That was their calling card for a while. They were very reliable dividends. It's like, yeah, it's wrestling. Who cares? I get my 50 cents or whatever per share per quarter, whatever it was. But yeah, they've been a very interesting company to kind of keep your eye on,
I think they're a bellwether. I think that's what I'm interested in now, and I will pay more attention to them because I think they're a bellwether for how a content company can navigate a very challenging time.
And I do give them credit for navigating this and doing pretty well. Again, the WWE Network launched in 2014 with perhaps unrealistic expectations, but they did, you know, course correct eventually. And they've got very smart people. As there's this guy, Nick Khan, he's their new co-CEO. He feels to me like one of the smartest executives in like streaming or Hollywood or whatever. Like more people don't know him. People know David Zaslav. People know guys like that. People don't know Nick Khan. I feel like that's a name you're going to be hearing more over the next couple of years.
Is Vince McMahon's daughter still?
She's co-CEO. Yes,
they're co-CEOs. So she's still there.
Yes. Yes, she had stepped away for a leave of absence about a month before all this Vince McMahon stuff started happening. Clever. She left the company, and she came back about 3 weeks later. So she's co-CEO, and then her husband, the former Triple H wrestler, his name is Paul, he is now in charge of the creative aspect.
That's not a good wrestler name. It should be the Undertaker Paul or Death Machine Paul or something. Paul. So
They've kind of got three executives kind of pulling the strings. The two co-CEOs running the business end, and then Paul Levesque, the former Triple H, or I guess still current Triple H, he's running the wrestling, the storyline.
What was his handle? Did he have a handle?
His name was Triple H, Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Awful. Just awful. No wonder he failed.
He was my favorite when I was like 14, 15. Oh, yes. And everyone hated him, but he was a bad guy. He was a heel, but I was
I always liked the bad guys. Yeah. Everybody does. So I actually had a question for Jason because you've seen 8K. So it was a pretty steady progression from SD, standard definition, to HD, full high def, to UHD, 4K. I'm wondering if we're going to make that same step to 8K. I feel like the problem is content's going to get they're TVs, but that content's going to get heavier and heavier. Do you think 8K is the next step, a logical step, or is it we don't need it any better than 4K?
No, I think we do need better than 4K. Like 4K still isn't as good as the human eye. You know, the human is as long as there's stuff that's going to be more like looking out a window and seeing.
So looked at it in Korea, in South Korea, it was like, wow, this is a significant step up.
The soccer was. I mean, the other stuff, like, you know, looking at beautiful pictures of mountains.
Yeah, they always have the same crappy content. Like, you know, here's a sea otter. Yeah, I know.
that stuff.
Look at the drops of water on his fur. It's incredible.
Because a lot. That stuff is amazing in 4K too. And right, I don't really notice the difference.
Well,
but
and
on the soccer, I did.
What you don't want to see is Lord of the Rings in 8K because Gandalf's staff looks like it came from, you know, Wizards R Us. It looks like a piece of plastic, which it is, by the way. Now you're seeing it as it is.
I'm a big fan of RuPaul's Drag Race, and I think the drag queens would have words with you if you tried to put them on 8K.
Yeah, let's not. Yeah.
Lose the magic.
All the pores. Yeah. No, I would say the soccer was the one thing that I was like,
sports.
Oh, okay.
No, sports makes a lot of sense.
It really looked amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know,
and probably I've, some big epic stuff.
I spent a lot of money with YouTube TV, with Google to get the Olympics in 4K, and it really does look fantastic. I mean, it's much better for sports. Not so hot for other things.
Jason, was that demo, was that in a higher frame rate as well, or was that the...
Oh, that's a good question.
It was in a much higher frame rate. That's why the soccer ball, when it went across the screen, it was like, whoa, there's no blur. It was
that
almost
would be great.
Like, so cool. Yeah.
And you need a giant screen because there's 8K on a 70-inch TV, big deal. Right.
But you're not going to tell. But this was 98 inches. It was 8K. It was high frame rate. Forgive me. I don't remember exactly what it was.
Sure.
But when the ball went across the screen, when the players were diving, you know, it was like, whoa, it's not blurry. Like all of a sudden.
He's not hurt. Like, I can see every inch.
Yeah, exactly.
I see it perfectly.
I see every grass stain on his, you know, socks. It was pretty interesting. That was where I realized like, okay, this is better.
The
like,
tool chain's there. I mean, we got the TVs, we've got the cameras. Delivery is a question mark. We don't really have a good way to deliver it at this point, but I guess we could solve that.
That reminds me. Bandwidth will keep getting better.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, at IFA, the big European kind of version of CES, in 2010, I was there and ESPN was announced 3D. They were going to do 3D sports. I think there's an official FIFA World Cup 2010 Blu-ray or whatever in 3D. But that feels... I think I may have had it at one point.
You cannot go to the store today and buy a 3D TV. They're all gone. I still have one with the glasses, which are dusty as hell because they're sitting behind the TV charging. Oh, those will work. Well, we've never used them on this Panasonic Viera. I think 3D, even in movies... There's no... Yeah. Do they do 3D movies anymore?
They do.
Do they?
They still do 3D. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. They still offer most of the big movies in 3D. And like Cinemark is still big with 3D.
Okay.
I think some of the others are too. Regal and
All right.
Can we talk about, speaking of 3D, can we talk about Mark Zuckerberg's?
Yes.
Oh my God.
When we come back, I want to take a break, but let's talk about Mark. I don't know what D that is. Is that a negative number? I don't know. Mark Zuckerberg's, what is it called? Horizon, New Horizon. What's the name of their virtual reality?
Horizon World.
Horizon World. Mark in Horizon World. As the Twitterverse said, $10 billion for that? Really? But before we do that, and I am so glad to have you guys as my panel today, Owen Thomas from Protocol, from Consumer Reports, Nicholas De Leon, and the wonderful Jason Heiner from ZDNet. I do want to talk about our sponsor for this segment of the show, ExpressVPN, the only VPN I use, the only VPN I trust. When you go to the bathroom, you close the door behind you, right? They always say, oh, well, you know, I have nothing to hide. You close the bathroom door, you have something to hide. You don't want random passerbys looking in saying, hey, So why would you let somebody watch you online using the internet without ExpressVPNs, like going to the bathroom and not closing the door? And I'll tell you why. Your internet service provider, they know every site you're going to. When you do a Google search, they know. They say, oh, hi, Leo. Sure, let me record all the things you search for because our advertisers would love to know that. And worse, lately we're seeing governments buy that information from data brokers, from third parties, subpoenaing that information from ISPs and sites like Facebook. You can get a lot of trouble for the stuff you're doing. In fact, we've got a story coming up in just a little bit how Google turned a guy's service off. ExpressVPN can put a stop to this. It creates a secure encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet so that your online activity can't be seen by anyone. Ad companies, tech giants, the government. You can use it on your devices. There was just an article about how there's no point in using a VPN on iOS because Apple has cleverly designed iOS to leak to leak data around your VPN. Well, there are ways, in fact, to use ExpressVPN on iOS and prevent that. But even better, put it on your router. Then it doesn't matter what your iPhone does. Everybody in the house is protected. ExpressVPN goes on every device. Many routers, smart TVs, phones, tablets, desktops, of course. You can protect everybody in your home. It's as easy as closing the bathroom door. You fire up the app, you click a button, you're protected. Because they have servers all over the world, the performance is superior. And let me emphasize this because I think it's important to know. It's important to choose the right VPN provider because, yeah, sure, the VPN is protecting you from your ISP, but then they see everything the ISP would see, right? So you've got to find a VPN provider that cares about your privacy as much as you do. ExpressVPN does. It was just a great article about how Express does what they do. They have a custom version of Debian, the Linux distro, that refreshes itself every day, so everything's wiped off. When you use the ExpressVPN, it fires up their trusted server in RAM sandbox, so it can't write to the hard drive, and as soon as you leave, it goes away, and so does every trace of your visit. They do everything possible to protect your privacy. No government, even if they seize the servers without a warrant, as happens sometimes, not in this country, but in other countries, no government can see what you've been doing with ExpressVPN. And we know that, too, from many news stories about governments seizing the servers, finding nothing on them. So very important. Number one VPN, according to Mashable, The Verge, countless others, the only one I use. If you want to protect your privacy, if you think your online activity should be your business and no one else's, go to expressvpn.com/twit today, expressvpn.com. Please use the /twit so they know you saw it here. And as a thank you, you'll get an extra 3 months free with your one-year plan. That's the best deal, less than $7 a month. And you do want to pay for a VPN because you want to be the customer, right, not the product. ExpressVPN.com/twit. Thank you, ExpressVPN, for your support of This Week in Tech. Zuck.
I'm so relieved. One sec, Leo. I just want to say I get so relieved when you have products on here that I'm already using because
it reaffirms
the amount of money.
Your choice.
Well, No. It's that the amount of money that I've spent when I come on the show over the years is like astronomical because I find out about new product because you pick good products and then I'm like, oh shoot, okay, I want to try it. I think the list of things that I've tried is definitely like in the dozens that you know from.
Thank
from
you.
Twit. So
bless
I should
you.
Really write you a. I should write you a
testimonial.
Testimonial.
Jason Heiner, editor in chief, ZDNet, says, yes, I buy all that crap. Everything. Here is, let's see, a picture of Mark Zuckerberg in his new virtual reality environment. They call it Horizon Worlds. Here's his Instagram. We're launching Horizon Worlds in France and Spain today. Looking forward to seeing people explore and build immersive worlds. And then there's a picture of a weak picture of the Eiffel Tower standing nowhere. I don't know what this is. Something in Spain. Is that supposed to be La Sagrada Familia? I guess
it,
so.
It is. I think so.
It's just so terrible. I can't tell. And who the hell is that? Is that a space alien? No, it's Zuck himself. Of course, immediately became a meme on Twitter and elsewhere saying he spent $10 billion for this. $10 billion last year alone.
I thought you were going to talk about that motherboard story of him in the. That they found.
I will. That's okay. Next. Okay. That's right. Next. Right. I am. I'm going to talk about that too. I'm not sure which one you wanted to talk about, Owen. Did you want to talk about this? Horizon Worlds?
Yes. I mean, basically the fact that Mark Zuckerberg got cyberbullied into an upgrade.
So he upgraded. Is this better? Okay. So look at this one. Hair, no texture. It's painted on his head. I don't know what's going on with the eyes. That's not his mouth. It's a very attractive mouth, but it's not his mouth. Here's the new improved texture in the hair. His eyes aren't quite as massive. He looks like maybe his nose, he was broken a couple of times. Maybe it's riding that surfboard with the flag. I don't know how he did that. And the mouth does look a little more like his, although he still
has
this.
It's kind of worse if you, you know, if you think about the uncanny valley theory.
It's like, a very, yeah.
It's trying to be realistic.
Yeah.
But it's kind of falling in that trough of like, you know, still not realistic enough. But
he posted on Instagram saying, I know that photo I posted earlier this week was pretty basic. Which, by the way, in Zuck world, basic is about the worst thing you could be. But it's pretty basic. So here's a better one. He said, I just took it real quickly. Major updates to Horizon and Avatar graphics coming soon. I'll share more at Connect. Also, I know the photo I posted earlier this week was pretty basic. It was taken very quickly to celebrate a launch. Mark, you're one of the richest men in the world. You own outright one of the biggest companies in the world. It was taken very quickly. We were in a rush. The graphics in Horizon are capable of much more, even on headsets. And actually, I have to say, whatever this is down at the bottom, that's a little more suitable. It looks like some Greek ruler.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm still not, I've got to tell you, not going to spend a minute in the Horizon worlds.
Yeah. I feel the same way. I feel, and I'm a huge gamer. If you leave me to my devices, I'll play Switch or PS5 all day. I don't know about this Horizon and the whole metaverse thing feels.
Do you do
very...
any? So which VR games do you play? Do you use the Quest or?
I have a Quest 2, the new one. I played Arizona Sunshine, the zombie game, when it came out. I'm not super, they're not, I don't find the games to be very good. And so I don't really play. Half-Life was good. Half-Life Alyx, which came out.
Yeah, because those things, the face suckers. I didn't play it, but
well,
I would imagine
is awesome too,
those would be really scary in VR, like jumping out of nowhere.
Yeah, I'm more of a traditional either PC or console gamer, or I'd frankly just rather ride my bike than like Horizon Worlds or whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think I brought this point up one of the previous times I was on. I don't know that there's an amount of money you could give my adopted mother where she would spend any amount of time in Horizon.
Using her as an example of a real person, in other words.
Yeah, she's a normal person with a normal job. She's a professor. This is fundamentally uninteresting to her. Yeah. And if it's uninteresting to her and uninteresting to me as a giant nerd gamer, who is hyped about this? I don't know.
You guys at Protocol had a really interesting interview with the product lead at Roblox, Josh Anon. I don't know if that's his real name. But they're doing it too. Roblox is going to do, last week the company announced a big step forward for its work on graphical fidelity with an update to the materials it lets its users create virtual worlds out of. Boy, if anybody could succeed in a virtual environment, it would be Roblox, right?
So I don't know if the graphics are the key thing. I mean, is it more the gameplay of the virtual worlds? I mean, that seems to be what makes
that's true of any game.
Fortnite.
It's true of any game. I mean, otherwise, people wouldn't play 8-bit games, right? It's the game.
Correct.
Yeah.
And Horizon Worlds isn't really a game, so you know.
Well, that's true too.
Drawing
it's a social.
Into it.
Yeah, it's a social. But is it not the case that this is Meta's future? Like this is all their hopes and fears and prayers are in this box called virtual reality.
Remember when Facebook was like where you went to play games, you know, like Scrabulous
Farmville.
They more or less, you know, just walked away from that entire market. I think if you are a game maker though, you're going to have long memories of that period and think really long and hard if you want to have that same company as your partner in building out games on top of Horizon Worlds.
I'm also not crazy about the idea of a company owning my metaverse. Like, whose metaverse are you in? Are you in the Roblox metaverse or are you in the Facebook metaverse? It feels like it shouldn't be like that. Right.
It's why NVIDIA is trying to do what it's doing with this, or what they're calling the Omniverse, which is this kind of cross-platform metaverse. And then they have quietly partnered with Pixar and Apple.
There you go.
And so if Apple does a headset, you know, worst kept secret in tech world, you know, in January or somewhere around there, you know, perhaps it's built on this platform. So that's interesting. I do agree that people have lock-in fatigue, I think. And so something like the metaverse feels like I think something that people are going to be really wary about being just locked into an ecosystem.
Here's NVIDIA's Drive Sim, which NVIDIA, as you know, is very much into autonomous vehicles. This is designed for you to test your autonomous vehicles. This is, I actually recognize this tunnel. This is a tunnel I would drive every day to get from San Francisco to Marin. The Robin Williams Tunnel, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Yeah. This looks pretty good. I mean, I could see maybe for a driving game or something like that. Yeah. Oh, actually, I guess it's in Germany now. Suddenly we're in Germany.
Come out of the tunnel in Germany.
Far, far, far off the Autobahn. Okay, so they got the technology. Certainly they got the hardware.
I do think it's, as Owen said, until there's a compelling experience, even that's the one asterisk I'll put on my, like, you know, ecosystem lock-in comment. Like, is if there's an experience that a lot of people want, they may throw that to the wind, you know, at least initially, to have an experience that they're really interested in. I think that's why you can argue that maybe Apple Arcade, which has been moderately successful for Apple, why it hasn't perhaps been more successful is it's never had that one must play experience that a lot of people want to go there for, even though I think they've taken some swings at that. I think it'll be the same for the metaverse too. Yeah. Like it's a hits based business, and until there's something that a lot of people want to go there and do, it probably won't see much action.
Yeah, it's like 3D TV. It's just that every company in the world spending billions of dollars hoping it's going to be the next big thing, but there's no guarantee, right? So let's now go to LACMA, the Los Angeles County Museum of Art. Eric King, who is a product designer at Riot Games, on a date with his girlfriend at the Los Angeles County Museum of Art. They were viewing an exhibition called The Archive of the World, Art and Imagination in Spanish America, 1500 to 1800. King saw something he'd not expect to see, a sculpture entitled Virgin of Mercy or Pilgrim of Quito. Take a look. Baby Mark. Same hair, same eyes. He actually looks a lot like the Horizon World's Mark Zuckerberg. He took a picture, of course, called Motherboard or tweeted it. I don't know. Somehow he let Motherboard know. I remember leaning over to my girlfriend and whispering in her ear, not to annoy other visitors, it looked just like Zuckerberg. She ended up laughing so hard, my attempt not to interrupt the space wasn't very effective. I guess Mark is probably the last guy in the world to have a Caesar cut haircut. So maybe it's no accident. Baby Zuck. That's the one you wanted to look at, right, Owen?
Exactly. It's the same uncanny valley effect.
It is.
You know, about the same quality of execution.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if Mark Zuckerberg is the reincarnation of the Pilgrim of Quito, but there's definitely some people at LACMA who think he is.
This reminds me of the Chinese doppelganger for Elon Musk. I'm sure you've talked about this on the show before.
Oh, no.
Big, in December. Yeah, no. Look up Chinese doppelganger for Elon Musk. this one is pretty wild.
All right. Let's see here. It's a guy in China who looks just like Elon Musk. And actually, this story says he has been suspended from TikTok and Twitter. Well, he does look just like he's the guy on the left. You might be puzzled.
Yeah.
His name, Yilong Ma, got suspended on Weibo and Douyin this week because Musk has previously said, I would like to meet him in person. He went viral. playing Elon Musk. And the Chinese authorities did not like it. Oh, his username is Yilong Musk.
Yeah.
239,000 followers on TikTok, 3.9 million likes. Wow. So TikTok is the last place he can be. Yeah, it's interesting. All right. Real news, real stories. How about this one? New York Times this morning. Wow, what a story. It starts with a young father who has a child who's not feeling at all well. They call the doctor. The doctor says, what's the problem? He says, well, you know, there's some swelling in his intimate parts. The doctor says, well, send me a picture. Cashmere Hill had the story. This was a Friday night in February of 2021. The nurse said, send photos so the doctor can review them. Mark's wife, as happens, by the way, all the time, especially during COVID. Mark's wife grabbed her husband's phone, texted a few high-quality close-ups of their son's groin area to her iPhone so she could upload them to the healthcare provider's messaging system. In one of them, Mark's hand was visible, helping to better display the swelling. That was that. With help from the photos, the doctor diagnosed the issue, prescribed antibiotics. The kid's feeling much better. However, a couple of days later, his Gmail account is shut down. He's a Google Fi user. He loses his not only his email, but his phone number. It turns out his Android camera had backed up his photos to the Google Cloud. Google's CSAM, Child Sexual Abuse Materials Scanner, automatically recognized it, sent it to NCMEC, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. NCMEC, of course, it didn't match anything in their existing database, so they had a human look at it. Human said, yeah, that's CSAM. And Google immediately took down his account because of, quote, harmful content that was a, quote, severe violation of Google's policies and might be illegal. Furthermore, they referred his name to the San Francisco Police Department. It's kind of ironic because the father was a software engineer working on an automated tool for taking down video content flagged by users as problematic. Mm-hmm. Who better, to understand how this worked? He filled out a form requesting a review of Google's decision, explaining what had happened. Google said, no, that's it. We are not going to reinstate the account. No further explanation. What he did not know is the SFPD had started an investigation. The SFPD eventually cleared him. In fact, he received in the mail a manila envelope in December. So this started in February. So 8 months, 9 months later, he got a manila, actually 10 months later, he got a manila envelope in the mail from the SFPD with a letter saying, you've been investigated. Copies of the search warrant were in there, served on Google and his ISP. They got everything. An investigator whose contact information was provided got Mark's internet searches, his local location history, his messages, any documents, photos, and videos he'd stored with Google. The investigator, at least, was intelligent enough to look at it and say, yeah, no, I understand what happened. I determined, this is the quote in the report, I determined the incident did not meet the elements of a crime. No crime occurred. So the father sent this back to Google saying, can I have my account back? Google said no. His account was permanently deleted, as was his Fi number. So he lost his emails, lost his Fi number, lost all the documents, lost all the photos, everything stored on Google. He says, I spoke to a lawyer about suing, how much it would cost. He says, I decided it wasn't worth the $7,000 I would have had to give the attorney. Look, no one supports child pornography or child sexual abuse material. But this is exactly the problem when Apple proposed this that EFF and others pointed out, this false positive that can have a devastating effect on your life. Even if you provide evidence that there was nothing going on wrong. His decade-old Google account, gone. He was a paying user of Google's web services, gone. And you know, this is the most humiliating. He now has to use Hotmail for his email address. I'm being silly. Isn't it? That's rude. It's horrible. Yeah. It's horrible.
The irony is that the San Francisco Police Department is being more helpful than Google. They have a copy of one of the parents that Cashmere Hill wrote about in this article of his Google account, and they're trying to get that data back to him. which again is more than Google is doing. I think, you know, this may be a case where regulation is called for, where if you can, you know, get cleared by a police department or other law enforcement agency in an investigation and present that evidence, you know, Google should not be able to make a determination that's, you know, above and beyond what the police have found. That seems, you know, that seems like Google appointing itself as the police.
Yeah, it's kind of sad you have to go to the San Francisco Police Department and say, can I have my data? Because Google won't give it to me? Wow. It does raise the issue, though. Remember, when you take pictures on your device, whether it's an iPhone or an Android phone, you may well be uploading it to servers where it's going to be scanned. And in fact, as soon as Google saw that, they scanned everything else. They went through everything he had on the Google servers. And I'm sure Apple would do exactly the same thing.
Yeah, there are
the companies.
Go ahead, Jason, and then Owen.
I was just going to say there are a couple takeaways from this. One is just what you said, Leo. Like, you have to be really thoughtful about, you know, photos that you take for that reason. And I think the other is that this is the kind of thing when these companies, you know, act and don't have a good system for appeal or a sort of a rational system for appealing what is clearly a mistaken, a bad filter. I've been a part of this. I could tell a story about it that was kind of just ridiculous on its face with YouTube. But this is where there's so many calls for regulation, because this is, again, where like institutions running over individuals. This is where you start to run into people really having the sense that we need to regulate big tech companies because they control so much of the universe now. And so there has to be guardrails put in place so that they can't just act with impunity, do these things to individuals that have real effects on their lives, and then have be completely flip about not having a good appeals process for them if they are flagged, you know, falsely.
So it's interesting. I'm watching the chat room, and some people in the chat room saying, well, he did that. It's illegal what he did, and Google had the right to go through it. Perhaps they agree that Google should restore it now, but nothing Google did was inappropriate. I disagree. I mean, the government couldn't do this without warrants. That's true. That the police department had to get warrants. They had to go to a court. They had to go to a judge. They did all that. Google didn't.
The police department literally found that no crime had been committed. So how I don't understand the viewers who are saying that
it wasn't a crime. It wasn't a crime.
Right.
And I can tell you right now, I mean, I've sent. Well, maybe I shouldn't talk about this, but it's not it's not unusual for a doctor to say, send me pictures, especially during COVID. This was standard practice. I don't know what you're supposed to do as a parent. And it's appalling.
I think actually there is an opportunity for, you know, for doctors to create maybe secure, you know, regulated apps that are like single purpose, and their safety, like the image never gets stored on a server except one that the doctor has access to. It's auto deleted after the doctor reviews it. You know, I think actually there's some smart technology that could be applied to like this specific scenario. Think there's also some logic to saying, just bring the kid into the doctor, you know, even if the even if the doctor says, oh, just take a photo, like, no.
Yeah. Or video, maybe do video. But I know that there are some of these like EMR systems that now have these like encrypted video chat or photo upload, which is likely related to some of these reasons. But I also wonder too, like, there's all kinds of opportunities for false positives. What if you're taking a, you know, baby's first bath? And you're giving the kid a bath.
Absolutely.
And you take a photo and you send it to the grandparents, right? you can imagine a scenario, tons of scenarios like that. Maybe their algorithms are smart enough to know the difference of that, because I have to think that's likely very common. But it still sort of raises the question of like, could that become a case where you're, have a false positive for child exploitation?
Yeah. To me, it's a strong argument against using automated tools for this. I understand there's a problem with child pornography. I don't know how widespread it is. Last year, Google filed 600,000 reports of child abuse material and disabled the accounts of 270,000 users.
Whoa.
Are all 270,000 people child pornographers? If it's that widespread, I guess we've got a problem. I don't think it is. Wow, I just, I understand these companies would far rather cut off, let's say, 100,000 people wrongly than be pilloried in the press for, allowing child pornographers to exist. But in fact, I have a feeling there's quite a bit of underground child pornography being circulated on these servers that... they're not effectively getting rid of. It's just shocking to me.
Can I ask? I haven't read the full article. Did Google provide comment to Kashmir? Did they say, they offer any explanation? No.
Okay. Oh yes, no, they did.
Oh, what they say? Did. Oh yeah, they did. Oh, okay, here we go.
They stood by their decision. Basically, they emphasized the importance of stopping the online spread of child sexual abuse material.
Even after the police cleared this guy, I agree with you, Owen. That seems to me that, like, is Google now, do they outrank the police? Like, we have law enforcement agencies. I don't know. I have zero insight to this. It feels like this is the type of thing Google's probably scrambling to, like, figure out how, what happened.
They're going to reinstate the guy now. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
But that's crazy that they kind of like...
In a statement, this is... Talk about an anemic statement. In a statement, Google said, this is from Kashmir Hill's article, child sexual abuse material is abhorrent, and we're committed to preventing the spread of it on our platforms. That's it.
Yeah.
All right. A few days after Mark filed the appeal, Google responded, it will not reinstate the account. No further explanation. That is a stock response. Of course, child sexual abuse material is abhorrent. That's not what this was.
Yeah, exactly. It reminds me of in the movie Scrooged, where Bill Murray plays the media executives and something happens and then the press calls and he's like, we at IBC are shocked.
Shocked. Tragedy. Yes. sometimes I just hate corporations. I don't know what to say about it. All right. Moving on. We can move on. Update your iPad, iPadOS, and macOS. Zero day in the wild. Two vulnerabilities found in WebKit, the browser engine that powers Safari. Because of it powering Safari, it means it powers everything else on the iPhone. The two flaws affect iPadOS, iOS, macOS Monterey. Maliciously crafted web content. So you go to a website with those devices, could lead to arbitrary code execution with kernel privileges, woo! And apparently some successful exploits, such as powerful nation-state spyware, are using these vulnerabilities to break through a device's layers of protection. So if you saw that update and you're saying, well, do I need to do it? Yeah, you do. Wow.
My friends and I were commenting on how this like ripped through all the family chat threads and
because there's people like you who have to now tell everybody, mom, dad, do this. They need to know, and they may not even know.
Whoever's the de facto family IT person,
right? Well, and that's why I mention it here. I know everybody who watches our shows are geeky, and they probably, I'm sure they've already applied the patch, but just tell everybody else you need to do this. All right, little break. We'll come back with more. Our fabulous panel, Jason Heiner, I like seeing you. Every time I see you, Jason, I get a little smile in my heart.
Thanks, Leo.
ZDNet editor-in-chief. It's also nice to see people succeed, and you have. And I do like it also that you have a Twit Fez and an original iMac. That was was that the first one, the original Mac Classic.
That was the Mac Classic. Wow. So it was like, you know, basically like third generation of the early Macs.
I wish I still had my Mac from 1984 that I spent 2,000. You have yours, John? I bought it at Macy's because wow. I had to charge it because I couldn't afford a $2,400 computer, but yeah. I could charge it on my Macy's card. So I got my first Mac in 84, I think March of 84 at Macy's. You too, John? And you, but you saved yours. What was I thinking? What a fool
I worked. I worked two jobs over the summer of before my senior year of high school to buy that because it was the same one we used in the journalism lab and so that I could do some of my work at home.
It's so cute. Are your kids old enough to be buying computers yet?
My daughter just on Friday bought her first phone with her first money. She's 16, so she got an iPhone 11 in purple.
Smart. Yeah. Perfect. Whoa. Purple iPhone, perfect. Our 19-year-old announced this morning, because he just got a job at Safeway. It's his second job. He said, I picked out the computer I'm going to buy.
Nice.
I think it kind of goes around. You get, you know, you work those jobs. You save up. The first thing you do, you save up enough money. By the way, the computer, he's going to buy a Corsair gaming machine a little bit more than that Macintosh.
That was $1,500.
He's ambitious. His mom, my wife said, maybe you should look at car insurance before you buy that computer. Oh, and what were you going to say?
I just remember I graduated high school like right before the Classic came out. And so we were stuck buying an SE30, which was like $1,000 more expensive. But that SE30 lasted, man. I used it.
Was the 30 because it had a 30 megabyte hard drive?
I think it was a 68030 chip.
Yeah. 68030. Okay. That was the 30.
The SE30 was actually what we had in the journalism lab, now that you say it, Owen. And the Classic was like essentially was the SE30, the sort of, you know, polished version of it or more.
Yeah, it's recognizable because it had the slots in the front. They looked like fins.
Yeah.
I'm just curious. Wow. It was $4,369 in 1989, which is equivalent to $9,550 today. Holy cow. It had a megabyte of RAM. You could get all the way up to 128. These are megabytes, kids.
Yeah.
Megabytes of RAM.
And I remember I had a friend who bought a 40 megabyte hard drive, external hard drive. To go, it was, and I can't even remember. It's like $800 at least, or $1,200 bucks or something. And I remember somebody telling him, "You'll never use that much space. You'll never have enough data to ever use all of that."
What was your first, Nicholas?
My first Mac was the second gen iMac. I got it in early 2002. And my first computer was some Packard Bell piece of junk in 1996.
I remember those.
It ran Windows 95.
Well.
It was a Frankenstein of a machine. I still have the iMac in my dad's basement, actually.
Nice.
With the original everything. It still has all my – I turned it on, I don't know, a couple years ago. It still has all my high school essays and
stuff.
Oh,
that's awesome.
On there.
Oh, yeah, you definitely keep that. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Nice.
That's great. All right, let's take a break, come back. Lots more to talk about. Also here, Nicholas De Leon, Consumer Reports. He is their senior electronics reporter. So
yes.
I guess that just covers you could do answering machines as well as computers.
I would love to do all sorts of wacky tech. Yeah, it's funny. We're still electronics. It's not technology. Even though we write about everything that any traditional technology publication would write about. I mostly cover laptops and like Wi-Fi stuff.
I have been a proud subscriber for, I don't know, 30 years. I wonder, I should log in and see if they say. I can't say that about protocol. I've been a proud subscriber for 6 months. Now I'm in the middle of a login and I said something. Don't say anything, Leo, or you'll mess up your password. I already did. Never mind. I'll take a break and I'll tell you coming up. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. We just hired somebody with ZipRecruiter. I'm trying to remember who. Oh, yeah. She starts Monday. Yeah, Viva. She starts Monday. And that's a great name, isn't it? Viva. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. And we believe it because we use it. Look, you're a business owner and it's summertime. The last thing you want to do is be spending your you could be at the pool. You don't want to be going through unqualified candidates for that job. You could be having a barbecue. You could be on vacation. You could be redoing your deck. You could be gardening. You could be watching House of Dragons. But no, your inbox is full. Your voicemail is full because you didn't use ZipRecruiter. You need to use ZipRecruiter. That's what we use whenever we have an opening. ZipRecruiter is the way to find great candidates because they do the work for you. And now you can try it free, ZipRecruiter.com/twit. So when Ashley left, she got a great job. We're very proud of her, as often happens with employees. She found a wonderful job, so she left. But that left us with a gaping hole in our continuity department. Lisa runs to ZipRecruiter because she knows it's the fastest way to hire. Plus, So first of all, you post on ZipRecruiter. It's going out to 100-plus job boards, social media. It goes everywhere. They put it everywhere. You just click once. They put it everywhere. But then they also do something amazing. They go through your opening, and they find people in their database. They have millions of resumes that match. And they send their names to you and say, look, here'd be some good people. And then you invite them. Now, I have to tell you, when you invite somebody to apply to a job, they are so flattered. It really is a great way to make that first introduction. They're going to follow through. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. It's the number one rated hiring site based on G2 satisfaction ratings as of the first of this year. And I have to tell you, we're very happy. Viva is not the first person we hired through ZipRecruiter. We've hired many of our best staff members at ZipRecruiter. You can too. Let ZipRecruiter do the work for you this summer. Try it free, ZipRecruiter.com/twit, ZipRecruiter, ZipRecruiter.com/twit. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire, and we can vouch for it because that's what we use, ZipRecruiter. I'm very happy with the zip, Yeah, I got to try one more time. My Consumer Reports password, I think it's monkey123. I think that's the problem. I think it's an old... I've been a member for so long. Does it say? I feel like it says.
I don't know offhand.
Yeah. My benefits, my products, my feed, account settings. Member... Oh, yeah. Member since 2001. 21 years since before you were born, Nicholas.
Wow. Thank you. Yeah. I'll say I spoke to a guy the other day in... He has been a CR subscriber, I think he said, since the 80s. I was like, wow, that actually might be before.
I'm sure I was a subscriber before 2001, because I know in the 80s and 90s, I would get the magazine, right? And I'd go through and I wouldn't buy a thing without looking at CR first. So,
yeah, that's how my parents were too. I remember the previous design with the red circles and stuff.
Yeah, love it.
It's green now, but...
Well... You are, thank you for the job you do. You are vital. Maybe you want to tell your readers to stay away. You mentioned your Packard Bell machine.
Yes.
You might want to stay away from laptops from, well, there are a variety of companies, but older Windows XP laptops. This is from a post by... Raymond Chen, who is a Microsoft chief software engineer, the story of what happens when those older laptops play the music video for Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation. Now, I would play it, but YouTube will immediately take us down. So I'll just leave that as an exercise for the listener. A major computer manufacturer, probably Packard Bell. I'm thinking, I don't know. I'm just saying. Discovered that when
you play... It was such a bad computer.
I wouldn't be surprised. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
That when you play Rhythm Nation, certain models of their laptop would crash. And they couldn't figure out why. So it also crashed the competitors' laptops. Eventually, they figured out what's in common. Oh, it's this particular model of 5,400 RPM laptop hard drives. The song has a resonant frequency that causes a vibration in the drive that causes it to crash. So this manufacturer fixed it by putting in a filter in the audio pipeline that removes that frequency. I don't know if that made Rhythm Nation sound terrible, but and then he mentions also a similar situation that happened with another laptop and resonance. A Microsoft developer revealed that playing the game 101 Monochrome Mazes, I don't remember this one, would reliably crash the machine because the speaker trace was so close to the reset trace, when it got vibrating, it would reset the computer. So, if you know what, it's so funny because these are such old computers, but I bet you there are people listening who go, yeah, I never could play that game. I thought it was something wrong with the game. Wow. So I would love right now to play Rhythm Nation and see if any of your computers crash. But let's hope you are not still using Windows XP. Raymond Chen posting at Microsoft blog, the old new thing. I love it when these guys tell anecdotes from the... You probably couldn't tell the story then because it would have looked bad for that company. But now, it's okay. We mentioned that tonight is the House of Dragons. I didn't mention, though, all the fabulous tie-ins to get you to watch this show. T-shirts. There's Funko Pops. There's barware. You can buy, believe it or not, at the Warner Brothers shop, artisanal serving planks from the Game of Thrones houses burnt into the serving plank. I think everyone should have such a thing.
There's your next sponsor, Leo.
You know what? If it's House of Dragon Funko Pops, I'm there. I'm with you. I'm with you. There's Viserys Targaryen. There's the Alicent Hightower, Daemon Targaryen, and sorry, I got to sign up and save. Why does Warner Brothers logo still have the water tank? Come on, guys. That is not the best way to represent your company. That's ridiculous. Is that in L.A.? That must be on their back lot somewhere. What are their House of Dragon things? Here's a exclusive House of Dragon beverage glass set. A jacket. Do you think they're going to judge this show on whether, you know, orders fly in? Here's a T-shirt that says, history does not remember blood. It remembers names. I'm not wearing that. I don't even know what that means. I'm not wearing that. You mentioned wrestling.
Oh, yes. I was waiting for this.
Yeah. AEW Dynamite brought back Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. He's 69, so he won't be wrestling.
Still better than half the guys today.
Anyway. Probably is. He can take a pile driver like no one else. He will be the special guest timekeeper. Does that mean he rings the bell? What does that mean?
Yes. Yes.
For a match between the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson, and Daniel Garcia.
Oh, that happened.
Oh, yeah, it's over.
That was last Wednesday.
Yeah. Was it a great... Oh, yeah. It was Wednesday. Yeah.
Yes.
Daniel Garcia did not have a dragon nickname, but decided he should have some. So he created a nickname for himself, the Dragon Slayer, and renamed his Scorpion Deathlock to... Was it good? Is that a good move? To the Dragon Tamer.
Yeah. Well, Danielson has been the American Dragon for like 20 years.
Oh, yeah.
It's been his nickname for ever,
basically. Yeah.
A bit of weird corporate whatever. But they're on TBS. It's all Warner Brothers Discovery, and it feels slightly like, I don't know how many viewers are going to tune into the Dragon Show because they saw Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Maybe they'll get a couple.
I'm all excited now. I got to see this show. Los Angeles Natural History Museum. It's a museum. It's natural history. They're going to have a House of the Dragon, the Targaryen Dynasty exhibit. displaying costumes and paraphernalia, as well as a giant dragon skeleton, which, as Vice is quick to point out, is a prop because dragons are not real, in case you were worried. But the weirdest one is HBO partnered with Duolingo. You can learn High Valyrian. They've updated their course in High Valyrian, 150 new words, 700 new sentences. I'm sure they had Klingon in the day, so this is just more of the same. There is a 3D billboard. Can I play this? I feel like I could play this. This is a 3D billboard in Times Square. I love these 3D billboards. Because aren't they cool? Japan, they do these all the time. It looks like that dragon is really on that building. That's pretty believable.
Yeah.
Is it going to breathe fire?
The screens have gotten so good. Wow.
They're so
good.
You
just set the whole building on fire.
Awesome. Blew it all off. Oh, and by the way, LG then says, watch it on our 97-inch TV.
Wait, how do you get a 97-inch TV into a house?
You don't. You build the house around it. I'm not kidding. Many years ago, Sharp at CES showed a 108-inch TV. And I was still at the time doing Live with Regis and Kelly. And I said, well, guys, let's show this on Live with Regis and Kelly. And they were so excited about this opportunity to show off this. At the time, you know, there was a battle. Who has the biggest screen at CES? You may remember this. It's like maybe, I don't know, 15 years ago. It was a long time ago. So the only way they could ship it is in the belly of a specially built 747. It arrives in this giant case with five technicians. They bring it onto the set. They open up the box. This is the day before. They open up the box. They take it out. It's got a line down the middle of the screen. They're immediately on the phone to Tokyo talking. They try. It's broken. There's something broke in transit. And so they said, when you show the TV on Live, we're going to have a lot of grass in the picture, and no one will see the line. And if you can, stand in the middle, okay? And I guess, you know what? You could I think that's still on YouTube. You could watch it. I don't think you'll see the line.
The way they're going to start to do these is they're going to make them in multiple panels. So we saw this in Korea, and they showed this at CES too. I think this might be the biggest TV ever shown off at CES. Samsung did the wall TV.
Oh, I loved the wall. I saw that.
292 inches.
That was awesome.
In smaller panels, like I want to say 50-inch.
Yeah, it's micro panels. LED. Yeah.
And then they put the panels next to each other and it looks seamless. You know, it doesn't so I think eventually, you know, someday that's what it'll be. I mean, it's also possible that it could be, and I know we've all seen this many times, like that they will the OLEDs will be rollable OLEDs, and you'll bring them in and they'll just be like rolled up like a poster, and then you'll spread that out, you know. 10, 20 years from now when they're not very expensive and we want to put up something larger than 65 inches or something, on our walls.
I think there are issues, as I remember, with the borders on these things, but I think that's the future. For me, that's going to be the future for me. Yeah, I'm not going to replace my big projector, my 100-inch projector, until they have them that big.
Yeah.
I think, yes, here it is, ladies and gentlemen. I found the video.
Yes.
Here I am. By the way, they put me in a lab coat, and everybody's in a lab coat.
Ladies and gentlemen, the world's largest flat Dr. panel.
Leo. Dr. Leo. Don't look for the green line down the middle.
Isn't this great? This is an LCD. It is 1080p. Now, there are only three in the world. This is the only one in the United States right now.
Wow.
I guess you can't see that line, can you?
It's so beautiful. Look at our gorgeous audience mugging for the camera.
There they are.
Am I going to get taken down by Regis and Kelly?
Sharp makes all sizes, but this is the biggest, 108.
Keep it 30 seconds.
We're commenting.
Yeah, we're commenting. This is derivative.
Right.
It's not going to do anything to...
is you have to take the roof off the house to get it in.
There you go. You literally had to take the roof off the house to get that in. You'd have to build the house around it. But if you're Shaq or whoever, and you know, you can afford a $150,000 TV, you can afford to take the roof off.
Leo, can I ask you a question? Was that a fun gig? That looks incredible.
Doing that?
That show. Oh, yes.
Yeah, it was a great gig. Dick DiBartolo, who, you know, Mad's Maddest Writer, he's our giz, did it for years with Kathy Lee, Regis Kathy Lee. After 9/11, they couldn't get anybody to come to New York to do the show. They called me like the next month, and I said, well, yeah, I'll come out. And I remember because I went over to the 9/11 site, and it was very, very, very moving. They had chain link fences around it, but, you know, posters. Have you seen this person? I can't find him.
Yeah.
Flowers. It was incredibly moving. It's now a beautiful memorial. They've really made it a gorgeous memorial. But I started, and then, and so that was 2001, and I did it for, I think, 10 or 13 years. I did it until Regis retired.
Wow. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
And then Lance Ulanoff, you guys will know, former editor-in-chief PC Magazine, he took it over. I don't know who's doing it now. Although, I'm lobbying. They had a guy who does sandwiches on TikTok, and I'm lobbying them to bring my son on, who is the king of sandwiches on TikTok with 2.1 million followers. Because then it would be like a dynasty, right? It's a dynasty.
It's like father and son playing the same baseball team. Incredible.
I don't think they'll make him wear a lab coat, though. That would be silly. Speaking of TV shows, here comes Ring, the video doorbell. MIT Technology Review headline says, Ring's new TV show is a brilliant but ominous viral marketing ploy. You know, Ring, which is owned by Amazon, has been getting a lot of heat lately for letting police have access to videos and so forth. Turns out the other doorbell guys, Google, do the same thing. So I'm not sure it's just a Ring problem. But one way to improve your reputation is to do a TV show that's kind of like America's Funniest Home Videos, only it's America's Funniest Home Doorbell Videos. There is a Ring doorbell hashtag on TikTok with 2.5 billion views. The new show will be called, it'll premiere next month. It'll be called Ring Nation. And it will feature, as you might imagine, videos from doorbells. Things like funny animals, marriage proposals, and heartwarming neighborhood interactions. This is from the press release. Wanda Sykes will host, and it comes from MGM Studios. Wait a minute. Who just bought MGM? Oh, Amazon!
Oh, yeah. That's funny. Shocker.
A shocker! So, you know what? It'll probably do fine. But I think it is a little bit about sanitizing. Oh, it's so cool. When we Ring, before Amazon bought them, Ring was a sponsor, and they loved it. I started this, actually, because they loved it. You'd see all these on Twitter. I'd pull up a few doorbell videos as part of the ad, and they loved that. Mm. So I think I should take some credit.
Anybody remember America's Funniest Home Videos?
Yeah.
It was actually really pretty good. And so that makes me think that
it'll be the same.
Some decent material
there's a ton
that they have to draw on.
I see it on Reddit all the time or Twitter. I always
just
enjoy
think of
those.
How many cameras and running 24/7. There's got to be at least, you know, 20-minute show worth of content a week. I mean,
yeah,
I easily. Agree.
Yeah,
for sure.
And there's lots. The thing is, and this is the only problem with the show. I don't know if you know, but remember this. But the Ring doorbell is it's a fisheye. So everything is fisheye. And it's a little, I don't know if I would want to watch a half hour of fisheye videos, but they actually started in 2018. And again, I want to totally take credit for this. They have a channel on tv.ring.com of Ring videos. And so I think it was just natural that they would do a TV show. So watch for that coming soon to a TV near you.
Was it Bob Saget that was
Bob Saget?
Host? They should bring Bob Saget back to
Who wants to tell Jason? Bob hit his head on a sink and passed away.
Oh, and now I feel terrible.
Yeah.
In the metaverse, we can bring Bob back.
I think so. Yeah. It was a weird story. Back in March, he was on tour. And they discovered his body in the hotel room the next morning, and the Orange County Sheriff's Office said that he died of accidental blunt head trauma. And it was, there was a bump in the front and the bump in the back, and it's, oh, I hate to say this, but it sounded almost comedic. Like he hit his head and then went, sprung back and then really hit his head and then went to bed because he died in his bed. Man. He thought, ow, that hurt, went to bed, and there was bleeding. Yeah. So
speaking of Avatar and Metaverse, Leo, did you guys, I missed it, did you guys talk about the Vin Scully Avatar at the Field of Dreams game the other day? Oh, yeah, Google that real quick. Vin Scully, obviously the legendary Dodgers announcer, he recently passed. Major League Baseball had a Field of Dreams game, which is a game between, who was it, the Cubs and the Reds in this kind of like cornfield from the movie. And I believe it was a seventh inning stretch. They had like a avatar thing of Vin Scully like singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game or something. I was wondering if you think it looks good or bad. I thought it looked kind of weird.
Apparently caused a lot of
yes
discomfort.
I was watching live. I was like, this doesn't look very convincing.
Here's a tweet.
The thought is nice.
Here, I'll and you know, I loved, did you grow up in the LA area?
Me? No.
Yeah.
New York.
Yeah. I loved Vin Scully, even though I was a Giants fan. He was the Dodgers play-by-play guy for 60 years. But there was nobody better. In fact, when he
was great.
It's weird because we were talking about him when we were talking about Apple Baseball some weeks ago, the day he died, but he hadn't passed yet, or we didn't know of it yet. We were talking about him. Then the very next day, we did a tribute to him. I played some old Vin Scully clips and stuff because there was nobody better. But this is from the Field of – they do this every year in Iowa. In the cornfield, where Field of Dreams,
it
the
was
movie
kind of
was.
Fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So he must have recorded this at some point. America. Yeah. But where's the avatar? So these are clips from the movie.
It was like in the seventh, during the seventh inning stretch. It was in the stands or whatever.
Like they did with Fitty. Who was it that they did that at?
Yes.
Not Fitty.
I don't know if it's the same tech or same company, but.
Yeah. Let me see if I can find the avatar. So that's the wrong thing, I guess.
I do kind of have a problem with using likenesses of people after they're gone. Like I had the same reaction with the Star Wars movie where they brought Grand Moff Tarkin back, you know, and you know, use the avatar instead of just getting somebody else to play the person.
Well, you have to. I mean, character. I'm sure Vin Scully's estate had to approve it. Well, maybe not, though. I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe his contract with the Dodgers said, and I, you know, every time we do a contract, it says we own your image in perpetuity in all forms of media now or ever more invented throughout the universe. Seriously, I remember Tech TV. The release would be that broad. So if you know, maybe you know, that was part of the deal, is that we can do anything we want with your
use those clauses to essentially say it's just where it gets concerning is where, because then you can put anything into that person's, you know, mouth, right?
Yeah.
And that's where
I think exactly the problem, isn't it? And
yes,
dead or alive, you don't have to be dead to have words put in your mouth.
This is true. This is
we
true.
We see it all the time in this day and age of deep fakes. It's just a matter of time. Just a matter of time. Let me take a quick break. Lots more to talk about. Great panel today. So good to have all three of you. This episode of This Week in Tech brought to you by, we love these guys, one of our longest-term sponsors, Audible, Audible. With my schedule, how I'm always on the go, I don't have a ton of time to do the things I want to do, like reading. That's why I love Audible. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers and new releases to celebrity memoirs, mysteries and thrillers, motivation, wellness, business, and more. You'll discover exclusive Audible originals from top celebrities, renowned experts, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose a title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. And all Audible members get access to a growing selection of audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts included with every membership. You can listen to all you want, and more get added every month. You can listen to the Audible app anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores. You decide. My latest read is Clara and the Sun. It's our club special. And what a great reader on this amazing audiobook about artificial friends. We'll be talking about it on Thursday, but you still have time to listen. Get the audiobook at audible.com right now. Let Audible help you discover new ways to laugh, be inspired, or be entertained. New members can try it free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/twit or text twit to 500-500. That's audible.com/twit or text twit to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. audible.com/twit. Thank you, Audible, for many years of supporting This Week in Tech. All right, I think we can go
back. Leo, can I close that loop very quickly, the baseball hologram thing? It was Harry Carey. I don't know why I said Vince Scully.
Oh, Harry Carey. No wonder I couldn't find it.
Yes.
No, no, that's no good. That's no good. I remember going to Wrigley Field in the seventh inning stretch. Harry leans, he's the broadcaster for the Chicago Cubs, leans precariously out the window of this broadcast booth, holding a beer. He's already six sheets to the wind. And he goes, now sing it with me. And he sings, take me out to the ball game. It was such a great tradition. Oh, that's kind of disappointing. That did they do the same thing with the
no beer this time. Yeah, it's.
But he did sang the song.
Yes, I'm curious as to your opinion.
Oh God, I saw it, and I feel bad for people who never got to see it in real life. So maybe this is a chance to see something. Here, I'll play this. Error, geo-restricted, video unavailable from your current location. The Twitch Studios, that's where.
I'm looking at it on YouTube right now.
Yeah, you know what? I'm at sportsnet.ca, so that's why. I'm in Canada. They don't want me to watch it. All right, YouTube. We've already done so many things that'll get us taken down. Might as well do one more. No, it's not your fault. I just, it's to YouTube's fault. These are all absolutely justifiable. It's just that YouTube, you know, is kind of just like Google, automated, and you don't really. I know Fox Sports is going to take me down for sure. We'll just edit this out. He was much drunker and older when I saw him. I don't like that at all.
Play a clip. Yeah, just play a clip of him doing it. He did it so many times.
Yeah.
There's no need.
Just play a clip.
He did it every game.
Sometimes we use technology when it's like, why?
You know,
like it's same thing with like when they did Princess Leia in that movie that I mentioned. Rogue One is the name of it, the Star Wars movie. And it was a really pretty good movie. And then those two avatars that they used is just like, why? It looked like cartoons.
But what do you think when it gets so good that you can't tell then what?
Yeah, I know.
They used for that. They used her like leftover film of her from other movies. She'd already passed, Carrie Fisher, and I think they spliced in old clips to match the content. But didn't
yeah, that was in the third movie. This was the one where they actually just at the very end she shows up, and it was an avatar with very bad.
Oh, it's badly done. CGI. But what if they did it perfectly?
Yeah, I know.
I'll jump in here because this popped up a few weeks ago. I believe it was Amazon. Correct me if I'm wrong. They said they were going to use the assistant to bring back Dead Relt.
Oh, that was creepy as hell.
Yes.
At their reinvent. Passed
when I was 15 years old. She passed away from cancer. Not to bring the show down, not to get too serious, that's true. That happened.
Yeah.
I have zero interest in like some Alexified version of hearing my mom say anything. Like that's insane to me. I have a million photos. We actually have like old whatever pre-VHS or whatever the camcorder, whatever the tape format was, videos of her. But like the idea that like I'm gonna let Amazon Alexa mimic my mother is like, and I tweeted to that extent, and you know people don't know how to respond to that type of admission, frankly. But like, it's like, I don't want that. And if anyone might, it might be me. Again, I'm speaking for me. I can't speak for other people, but for someone who has like standing in this conversation, that doesn't really interest me. No, sir. No, thank you.
Amazon announced this at that Remars conference in Las Vegas. Rohit Prasad, who's senior vice president, head scientist for Alexa, said, while AI can't eliminate that pain of loss, it can definitely make their memories last. In a video played at the event, an Echo Dot is asked, A-word, can grandma finish reading me The Wizard of Oz? Echo responds, okay. And then suddenly it's the kid's grandma voice. We had to learn to produce a high quality voice with less than a minute of recording.
We're only at the beginning of this. Like we have
but
to.
But I know you don't want it, but Nicholas. But maybe somebody would.
I do get that, and I'm 100% fine with that. But my perspective is like, humans have souls. You know, we're not just like a clump of cells that you can replicate in with some dumb algorithm. And I don't like it. I don't like it.
Remember the Black Mirror episode where her boyfriend has died, and there's a service that brings him back. And of course, it's Black Mirror, so it ends in terror. It's not good. I mean, this is something that's probably going to happen. It's not maybe not in my lifetime, maybe in yours, yeah. Nicholas.
But people have already.
Go ahead, Owen.
Oh, people have created chatbots based on, you know, the text message history with a loved one.
Yeah.
And it seems to be, for the people who've done it, it seems to be a form of mourning. You know, I can't get inside their heads about why that is, how they're processing the loss. But the technology is there.
I wouldn't want to deny it to somebody who wants it, I guess.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's my perspective. You know, if someone is into that, if they attach meaning to that, or if that is meaningful for whatever reason, or part of the process, that's awesome. That's great. I'm happy for you, frankly. But for me, I don't like it, I guess.
And let's not forget that at least Microsoft and Meta haven't got the best track record with chatbots. Both of them. There was Tay. Remember Microsoft's Tay? Which was taking ideas from, I don't know where, Twitter or Reddit, and eventually became racist, anti-Semitic, and nasty. Same thing happened 2 weeks ago with Meta. They had a Blender bot, an AI chat bot, supposedly giving Facebook users the opportunity to talk to Meta and share feedback. It also became basically anti-Semitic. It said, Jews are overrepresented among America's super rich, and political conservatives are now outnumbered by liberal, left-leaning Jews. It turned into Trump. Wow. And it also thought Trump was the president still. It had to be taught that, no, in fact, Joe Biden is not a former vice president. He's the president of the United States. So I'm not sure that a chatbot of grandma going to be really bad if grandma came back as an anti-Semite. I mean, really, wow.
I do think we're just at the beginning of this. Like, this is going to be a decade long debate, you know, about
it's going to come up.
Things.
Sure.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. Because the technology is getting better and better to your point, you know, Leo, what happens when it is good enough? The part that I worry a little bit about is just taking somebody's likeness, companies profiting off of the likeness and the voice of someone and putting things, words and, you know, expressions and all of it into them and profiting, you know, off of them when those aren't, in fact, you know, their views necessarily. Right.
I mean, if you have a recording of grandma, wow, great. Do you have any, Nicholas, any recordings of your mom, any videos or pictures?
Yes, we have videos. We have whatever the camcorder was in like the 80s and 90s. We have those.
So those are cherished, I'm sure, right?
Yeah. But that's different from like Amazon, like algorithmically spinning up her voice. Are they going to monetize my mother? Like what? Come on.
No. And I have to say, more and more, I mean, everybody now has hundreds of thousands of pictures of themselves and videos. You know, anybody who's anything after, say, 2005, it's well documented. So when I'm gone, there'll be hundreds of thousands of hours my kids can ignore. It'll be great. That's the future. I think we don't need deep fakes if you've got those, is what I'm saying.
This show may still go on. They will be, with all the footage that you've given us, there could be, you know, an avatar of Leo hosting Twitch for another 50
honestly,
years.
Honestly, I endorse that message. If I could find somebody who would create an avatar, an AI that could speak like me and say things that I might say, I don't even care if it becomes anti-Semitic. I don't care. I'll be dead. But I think that would be great if, you know, we get to Twit 2000 and it's me still hosting it. That'd be great. I like that. I love that idea. Let's take a little break. We will talk lots more. We haven't even gotten some of the biggest stories of the week. I can't believe it. It's too much fun talking to you guys. It's wonderful to have you. Owen Thomas from Protocol. He is senior editor there. Senior electronics reviewer for Consumers Union, the fabulous Consumer Reports, Nicholas De Leon. Great to have you.
Thank you.
And, of course, editor-in-chief of ZDNet, Jason Heiner. Our show today brought to you by Noom. If you do have a Leo avatar, I hope you will use a more modern, a little chubby in the old days, and maybe you don't want to bring that one back. In fact, you know, maybe wait a little bit. I'll get even thinner. Noom is my secret. I've been on every day. You know, anybody who's followed our shows, I'm always talking about the lightest diet. Finally, I got tired of dieting, but more than a year ago, I told my wife, I said, Lisa, I want to do Noom. And because I'd seen the ads, as you probably have, and I thought this might be a better idea. It's not a diet. It's about learning what triggers you to eat, why you eat, what you eat, and all of that. There are no bad foods. There's no restrictions. Noom is about learning so that you eat more healthily. And as a result, perhaps lose weight. So Lisa said, okay, a couple of days later, let me do it too. I only have a little bit to lose. Lisa is now on the lifetime maintenance plan. She lost all the weight. She looks fantastic. I lost about 20 pounds. She didn't have much to lose. I think she lost 10 pounds, but she's kept it off. It's amazing. Noom Weight is a psychology-first approach. It's designed to help you build more sustainable habits and behaviors with lasting results, and it's true. In fact, on the cruise, there was a guy in our chat who I love. I won't name names because I don't want to embarrass him. But I love this guy, and I was really looking forward to seeing him on the cruise, and he wasn't there. I couldn't find him. I put on Discord. I said, where are you? He said, I'm right here. I didn't recognize him because he'd lost 60 pounds since I saw him last. And I said, what did you do? He said, Noom. I said, it worked. He said, I loved it. He's kept it off. Neither of us gained weight on the cruise. Actually, Lisa lost a pound. I don't know how she did that. But that's saying a lot. You go on a cruise where there's 18 meals a day and you don't gain weight? Noom. Because I learned why I eat, how I eat. I'm a fog eater. I don't even notice the food I'm putting in my mouth. So Noom helped me with their lessons to pay attention to every bite, to turn off the TV, put down the phone, and focus and chew and eat. And my meals are more enjoyable. And I don't eat in a fog anymore. To date, Noom Weight has helped more than 3.6 million people lose weight, including Lisa and me. Every journey's different, and that's neat. Lisa's lessons were different than mine. They're always personalized to you, your goals. It's based on scientific principles, well-known technologies like CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, that help you understand your relationship with food. So there's no bad foods. There's no restrictions. Whatever your health goals are, it's a flexible, non-restrictive program that focuses on progress instead of perfection. And you get to do it the way you want to do it. Choose your level of support from 5-minute daily check-ins, personal coaching. You get a group if you want to participate in. You get a coach. You get an app, a fantastic app on iOS and Android. Days off, fine. They even tell you, actually, sometimes they'll say, you've done so well, celebrate today. You know, have some fun. Eat a piece of cheesecake. It's okay. And no matter what happens, Noom always helps you get back on track. Active Noomers lose an average of 15 pounds in 16 weeks. I lost more. 95% of customers say Noom weight is a good long-term solution. Absolutely validates that. They've published more than 30 peer-reviewed scientific articles to inform their users and practitioners and scientists about their methods, about their effectiveness. It really, really works. It's grounded in science. And I can tell you, it works. I've met so many people now, and we've told so many people, we've shown so many people about Noom and with great results. I'm kind of a Noom ambassador these days. As Lisa really is. She loves it. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom Weight psychology-based approach. I got my trainer to do it, my massage therapist. Sign up for your trial today, Noom.com/twit, Noom.com/twit. I hope I can get you interested. At least go check, do the trial. That when you first sign up, there's an onboarding thing. There's a lot of questions. Do that because it really is tailoring the program to exactly what you need. That's really important. Noom, Noom.com/twit. Thank you, Noom. Seriously, thank you for everything you've done for us. Before we get back, real quickly, a fabulous week on Twit. We made a little movie to celebrate. Watch.
John Deere. Someone finally managed to hack into their operating system. These bastards that control the food production and the tractors for everybody in the world have been stealing Linux, an ancient, obsolete, unpatched, buggy version of our stuff. They don't even have a GPL policy. I didn't get that out of my system.
Previously on Twit, hands-on photography.
Today I'm in the lab because I want to talk about product photography. Today's episode, I'm just going to work with a particular product that you could do it with anything. It just needs to be some type of product of a brand that you recognize and just go from there.
This week in Enterprise Tech.
If you're sitting in front of a Mac keyboard, listen up. An article on dark reading has detailed an expanded and enhanced malware campaign called Operation Intercept. It's aimed at Macs running on the M1 chip, and it's courtesy of our old friends, North Korea's own Lazarus Group.
This week in Google.
Amazon and Nielsen, this is interesting, have made a deal to get ratings for Thursday Night Football. Nielsen will primarily measure Amazon viewers on TV sets. The very fact that they use the phrase TV sets, sounds like the 50s.
Could you touch those great Amazon rabbit ears we got on that TV?
Twit.
The UHF or VHF?
We had a lot of fun. And, of course, Club Twit members add to the fun. We're going to have a great book club on Thursday. If you're not a member of Club Twit, here's the pitch real quick. $7 a month. You get ad-free versions of all the shows. You get access to the really fun Club Twit Discord, where there are always good conversations, not just about the shows, but about everything geeks are into. You also get the Twit Plus feed, and you get some special stuff that we don't put out in public. Hands-on Windows, Paul Thurrott's new show, Hands-on Macintosh, Micah Sargent's new show, the Untitled Linux Show, although it should be the Ultimate Linux Show, the Giz Fizz. And as I mentioned on Thursday, our book club, Clara and the Sun, Aunt Stacy and I will talk about a wonderful book. And you still have time to read it. You can read it pretty quickly or listen on Audible. All of that, it's like a country club for Twit listeners. Twit.tv/clubtwit, just $7 a month. We thank all of our Club Twit members because they really are helping us out in what we anticipate to be next year, maybe even harder than the COVID years. It's lean out there because there's a lot of reasons. I'm going to blame Spotify. You guys are great, so thank you for the support. $7 a month, twit.tv/clubtwit. I bought this. I'm so sad I bought it. Shortly after I got it, Snap canceled it. The Flying Selfie Pixie Drone. I should have brought it. I have it at home. It's the idea is it lands in your hand, you throw it in the air, it takes a selfie of you, puts it on Snap. I updated it and it crashed, and I never was able to get it working again. But 4 months after its launch, Snap says, yeah, never mind. the Pixie drone. $230 I wasted.
Ouch.
Ouch.
Do you remember Lily Robotics?
No.
I think it was a drone startup with pretty much the same idea. They filed for bankruptcy in 2017. I believe.
Oh, this is the one that would follow you around?
Yes. Probably ahead of its time.
Yeah,
they got in trouble with the, I believe, with local officials in San Francisco where they were based, basically saying that they kind of deceived people with their crowdfunding.
They were raided by the SFPD. Took 60,000 orders worth more than $34 million for their drone. Did they never ship a drone?
I don't believe they did. I mean, obviously, drone technology is a lot better now. This is 5 years on from their failure. But
yeah, in fact, my drone will follow me now, which is good because if I were steering it, it would plow right into a tree.
I remember covering one in 2016 in China. I saw it. It was called Hover Camera. There's an article on, actually it's on ZDNet, I think, or Tech Republic. It's just called Hover Camera. They eventually made it to CES. It is on ZDNet. I saw it at GMIC Beijing, which is kind of like their version of CES. It was really interesting at the time. It was one of the first ones that I saw that actually worked, where you could hold it in your hand. You know, you hit the app on your phone, it takes off, and then it can follow you around and take a good camera. You can, I think, you used gestures to tell it.
Oh, this looks very similar, same idea as the Snap one.
Yeah.
Well. Can you still get it, the Hover?
I don't know, but I think they did actually ship it.
Yeah, it was available in Apple stores for $500.
Yeah. Ouch. This is 00 Robotics was the company that did it. They were in stealth mode until just before that.
Yeah, a previous version of this article stated customers could fly the Hover Camera Passport in stores with the assistance of the Apple Genius. We have corrected it to reflect the fact that you can't. The employee will fly it.
that one's a little different.
Is that different? This is one can fly in the Apple stores.
Okay. Oh, no. That one is the right one.
Yeah,
this one was a year after my original story. But it's okay. It's the same. That is the same
idea.
But they had a video too. That looks like it's still live on YouTube. But I don't know whatever happened to them. They sort of lost touch.
You know, if you're not DJI, it's going to be a tough.
It's going to be tough.
Yeah,
for sure.
Speaking of DJI, Chinese company, U.S. is planning. In fact, this article is from Protocol to block sales of older chip making tech to China. China has been trying to catch up desperately with Taiwan with TSMC. With American chip makers, especially because TSMC now has gotten down to the 3-nanometer process, quote 3-nanometer process. Yeah. But they do it with a technology that the U.S. government will not allow China to have, EUV, extreme ultraviolet lithography. EUV tools are manufactured by a Dutch firm. But the U.S. was able to convince the Netherlands to block the company from selling equipment to China because one of the submodules is made in California. And without that, they can't build the EUV machines. What do you think of this, Owen? This is your story. Not your, Max Cherney wrote it, but from Protocol. Is this fair play?
I think so. It's really interesting that rather than kind of play with the nanometers, which have become really just marketing hype in the chip world, they're looking at specific technologies and looking where they can kind of trip China up in this race to, you know, ever improving chip technology. It's certainly fair play in that China has made no secret that it wants to fight a kind of war of technological and scientific advancement with the West, if they're, you know, if they're thinking about that as a means of war, then, you know, this is seems like a logical response.
I'd make the argument the opposite, though. And of course, it's a very tricky game to play, especially with China, which is very adept at manipulating soft power tools, you know, sending money to Africa and other countries in their Road and Belt Initiative. I feel like the thing that keeps the peace best is if we're all in bed together. If economically China is dependent on us, they're not going to declare war on us. So I feel like there should be a way to work with China to support China's growth. Maybe they're hostile, in which case I guess we have to be sort of hostile back. But I also think it's so important for us to be in relationship with them, that that's how you have peace. Yes?
For sure.
I think that's why really it's so...
Go ahead first, Jason, and then we'll go back to you, Owen. Sorry.
Owen can finish, and then I'll go.
Okay, Owen?
And I think the key thing here is, like, this is a very nuanced...
I'd agree with you on that, yes.
You know, policy. Like, it really gets into the weeds of... you know, technologies like FinFET and EUV.
I think you want to avoid, though, kind of xenophobia and say, oh, they're Chinese, they're dangerous. And I see that with TikTok and stuff.
Yeah, and that's why compared to, say, the Trump administration's approach to TikTok, this is just incredibly nuanced and specific. And, you know, it feels like there's a strategy and a goal that is more than just, like, beat up China. Like, the U.S. administration is... thinking, you know, what do we want to accomplish here? And I think that's, you know,
yeah,
that's
interesting. I don't want to verge to the Red Scare mentality of the 50s, but at the same time, I understand this is a very subtle diplomatic game, and sometimes you have to exert pressure. Maybe that's how the Biden administration is exerting pressure. I don't think the tariffs that the Trump administration used were a very good or effective tool. They hurt us more than they hurt China, frankly. But I also think it's so important. I don't want to get in a situation where we're at odds. We sort of are, right? But let's maybe tamp it down a little bit. For instance, I don't know if we'd had stronger economic ties with Russia, would they have been so apt to invade Ukraine? And if we did, then our sanctions would have been more effective, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. I'm not an expert on this kind of thing. I worry that if we get too knee-jerk in our response, everybody is at risk.
Everybody loses. Yeah, and we are. The U.S. economy is so interdependent with China and vice versa. And the moves to separate, you know, or to wall off it is not going to be helpful or useful. Now there is still competition between the two. There likely will be. It's the number one and two economies in the world. There's going to be competition for tech and for just innovation in general as part of this. But you're going to see things like I think. Keeping technology out of the hands of the Chinese, unless it has some kind of, you're worried about them doing something that is, it is going to be used destructively against someone else, doesn't necessarily seem like the best idea. Now, at the same time, you have China saying recently that all of this American, like the U.S. CHIPS Act, was anti-competitive for global competition.
It was.
Right?
it was the point of it. We'll give money to our American and Taiwanese chip manufacturers as long as they don't do any business with China. I mean, it was expressly that.
But it won in ultimately what that CHIPS Act was in. Its core was a response to what China and Taiwan and South Korea have already been doing with their chip manufacturers for years, for decades, and that the U.S. has fallen behind because they haven't made this a friendly environment for those, for companies to operate those kind of chip making facilities here. And so they're behind. It's going to take, you know, 5 years at least for the U.S. to catch up, even with the CHIPS Act. And so, you know, some of these things are, all of that is just to say that some of these things are stuff that happens, that you know, try to win the war of rhetoric, when in fact, it's just really good. There's a lot of really intense competition for things that are going to, you know, shape the future of the economy, the future of innovation. And so it's not a bad thing that these companies have, you know, are sort of elbowing each other to move forward and compete with each other. We just need to make sure our elbows aren't too sharp.
Yeah. Well put. It is a delicate tightrope.
Yeah.
And it's well above my pay grade, but I feel like it makes me, what we don't want is for the two economies to become decoupled.
That's right.
That's
agreed.
Very dangerous at some point.
Yeah.
I think we're almost done here, except for this, the tool that monitors how long kids are in the bathroom is now in 1,000 American schools. Oh, great. We've seen this in the workplace, where employers are closely monitoring their employees' break time, bathroom time, and so forth. And now they're doing it in schools with something called e-hall pass, a digital system that students have to use to request to leave their classroom, which notes how long they've been away. It's being used widely in 1,000 schools in the United States, very much like the tool used to monitor Amazon employees. I don't know if I like this idea or not. I don't like it. I know that.
Yeah.
I definitely don't like this. I can't imagine. Do we really need to do that?
It's just policing. You know, it's just over-policing.
It is over-policing. Yeah.
You know, like, why does a kid ask to go to the bathroom? Sometimes they need to go to the bathroom. Sometimes they just need to be by themselves for a second.
You know what?
Sometimes
if they wanted to go to smoke a cigarette, let them go. You know? We don't have to judge it. I need some bathroom time. Do you mind? The tool promises, quote, hall omniscience, with the ability to always know who has a pass and who doesn't without asking the student. Hey, papers, please. it is also designed, the website says specifically, to block vandalism and TikTok challenges. All right, maybe I'm out of touch.
The fact that those two things are together
Maybe I'm out of touch. But maybe there is a problem now with kids going off and twerking in the hallways. I don't know. Maybe doing the dance. I don't know.
How long until some smart kid just hacks that and just like disables it? This feels like one of those who asked
there you
for
go.
This.
There you
are
go.
Are teachers asking for this? Don't they have like a million one other things to worry about?
There you
like
go.
Omniscience in the hallway.
Yeah, we don't need a hallway omniscience.
No, I don't think we do.
Also, like, they're already managing for outcomes, right? Like they have standardized testing. Kids get grades.
Yeah.
You know, if they're going to the bathroom a little longer because they need a break, like Owen was saying, sometimes they just need a break, right?
Yeah, let them cry.
And their grades are and they're doing okay on their grades. Like, it's fine, right? And if they're not doing okay on their grades, then you know because there's not spending enough time in the classroom or whatever, then there's probably bigger things to work on than.
Well, you know. I know one bigger thing I want to work on, the House of Dragons. I want to let you guys go so you can either watch or not watch and make a statement by your lack of attendance. Thank you so much, Jason Heiner, for being here. Good job on the new ZDNet. I think it really looks great. I told Mary Jo Foley, your employee, how much I liked it. She's shocked. You know, I went to her article on Wednesday. I guess you launched it on Wednesday.
Wednesday
and I went, whoa, this is a new ZDNet. But I immediately liked it better because it's just cleaner. It's easy to find stuff. The stuff you want is there. Well done.
Thank you. Lots of thought, lots of people that worked on it, but really it embraces our mission for 2022 and beyond, which is helping people deal with disruptive innovation, understand it, understand how they can sort of have a piece of it now for the things, because our audience has always been professionals, early adopters, enthusiasts. And so we wanted to make a site that really reflected that and that serves that audience really well. And so we've simplified a lot of things and really optimized for what we believe is a very exciting, very momentous sort of next 5 to 10 years in tech, and that's what we're preparing for.
Good. I'm a fan, having worked for more than a decade for Ziff Davis, back the original parent company, back in the tech TV days and before. I know so many people, including you, working at ZDNet, really very talented, good writers, great people. I want it to succeed. We need it. So I'm glad you're doing well. It's great to see you again, Jason. Thank you for joining
us. Thanks, Leo. Likewise.
Mr. Owen Thomas, always a pleasure to see you. Tell me something exciting and new about Protocol. What's going on over there? I like it that it's free. I really like that.
Still haven't dabbled in the paywall universe, though. You know, never say never. We are just rocking and rolling, you know, doing coverage from Washington to Wall Street to Silicon Valley, especially at that nexus of policy and technology where things get like little wonky and weird. I think the chip story is a good example of what we do, where we can, you know, we can deep dive into the details of the technology and then like zoom out and tell you big picture why it matters.
Yeah, I loved your article about wallets and why everybody's doing a wallet now. And it's that kind of understanding that's so important and so useful to people who cover this space. And I visit Protocol every single day. So thank you for the good work you're doing. And my friend from Consumers Union, of course, you know I love Consumer Reports. Nicholas De Leon, what are you working on right now?
I am working on, and it should be published in the week or two. We did a big thing on gaming chairs earlier this year.
Yeah, I remember that. Yes,
that is wrapping up. We bought every single gaming chair of note and ran them through the ringer because they're very popular. Kids like I'm sitting on one right now.
Sure.
And kind of give you tips and which ones to buy, which ones to avoid. I don't really want to say too much on the air right now, but it is a very thorough investigation into these gaming chairs, which again, they're kids love them. You cannot use YouTube without seeing these things. So that's what I've been working on and off for the past couple of weeks.
Well,
and that should be published quite soon.
Somebody blew the lid off the gaming chair consortium.
Well, you see so many roundups on other sites. I'm not going to mention names, but like, did they buy these chairs with their own money? Probably not. Did they even get review units in? I kind of doubt that. It's just aggregated, like, regurgitated marketing copy. And it's like, okay, that's fine, I guess. But, like, we bought them and used them. And we have, like, guys with PhDs on staff that, like, analyze these things for performance and their ergonomic bona fide. And they're – I don't want to say anything. They're not great, I guess I can say, which is probably not surprising.
Yeah.
Most of them are not awesome. I guess I'll leave it at that. But it is interesting to see the brands, which ones do better than others and which ones are just not good, I guess. I don't want to say too much. I'll probably get in trouble.
Well,
but that is coming up in a week or two.
Plus a great article on the new tax credits for plug-in hybrids.
Yes, I was going to mention that, actually.
That's really confusing, and so thank you for doing the hard work to figure out which ones qualify and which ones don't. Of course, I've been a member forever. ConsumerReports.org, the Consumers Union. You guys do great work, and it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you, Nicholas.
Thank you, Leo.
Thanks to all three of you. It's a great, great show. We do Twit Sunday afternoons. It's kind of the last word in tech and the first podcast of the week. We'd like to do it Sunday so you can have it on Monday. I used to say for your Monday morning commute, but if your commute is just from the bedroom to the office, that's fine. We do it at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC of a Sunday evening. I mentioned that because you can watch us do it live, live.twit.tv. Live audio and video streams there. If you are watching live, chat with us live. Our IRC is irc.twit.tv. There's instructions there for using an IRC client, or you can just use your web browser to participate in the chat. And, of course, our Club Twit members are in their Discord chat as well. After the fact, on-demand versions of the show are available at the website. There is also a YouTube channel, youtube.com/thisweekintech. And there is, of course, an RSS feed because we're a podcast. So you can subscribe in your favorite podcast client, and that way you get it automatically. So it'll be there for you Monday morning, however far your commute. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can. Bye-bye.
Doing the twit.
Doing the twit.